It's time for the Scott Rintoul Show.
He holds, he shoots, he scores!
Where the West...
Patterson up the left wing, steps into a slap shot and scores. Elias Patterson, oh my word, again.
Is one.
Rebound, Kachuk scores! What a night for Matthew Kachuk.
Let's make it happen. Everything you've got, no excuses.
Jackson avoids, spins, he's in. Touchdown, McCaffrey leaps.
Now, here's Scott Rintoul.
Pull my trigger, let me blow your mind.
What's going on? How's your Thursday? Hope it's going well. Scott Rintoul with you. Or how's your Thanksgiving? If you happen to be listening to us south of the border, happy Thanksgiving to those down south. We are thankful for three games of football. And if I had been laying this show out a week ago, I would have looked at the schedule and I would have said, well, certainly we'll be talking about the National Football League and kicking off week 13 and three games on tap, the first of which gets going in a half an hour. And there's going to be something that comes out of a busy night on ice. And there was plenty. There was plenty last night. The Flames find a way to get a win and carve out a victory. The Canucks have a roller coaster of a game that results in 14 goals. Unfortunately for them, they give up eight of them, including six in the third period, and lose a wild one. And we'll touch on those things, and we'll touch on what happened to the Nashville Predators last night, who lose on a buzzer beater and then an overtime goal after it looked like they had a much-needed win wrapped up. But we all know the story that is dominating the hockey world right now and dominating conversation in this country. And each day we get more information and the story takes another turn, another twist. And that, of course, is what has happened here over the last 24 hours. I don't know. I can't tell you what chapter we're on in the Bill Peters saga right now. I have no idea how long this book is going to be. But the latest development came down last night, and then another one has come down this morning. Let's go back to last night. Bill Peters issues a statement that includes an admission to using what was termed in the statement as quote-unquote offensive language, a claim that he immediately returned to the dressing room to apologize to the team after using said language, a claim the offensive language was directed at no one in particular, and it finished with a general apology to those negatively affected by his words. Now, there are a couple of important aspects to note in the statement that came out last night. There was no mention specifically of Hakeem Alyu in the body of Peter's statement. There is a conflicting account of the events that Alyu described in his accusation, including that an apology was never issued. That's what Alyu said in his original conversation and his quotes with Frank Cervelli in that story that has shed a lot of light on this situation. Alyu also said that the offensive language, multiple uses, by the way, of the N-word, according to him, and teammates who have corroborated it now, that Alyu said that was directed at him in particular, and it was very obvious, whereas, you know, Bill Peters says, it was a general term thrown out, it was to the room. Well, Alyu says, no, it was pretty clear. And it was in Peter's conversation with him in more than one interaction. So at that point, it leads us to Brad Treliving, who got the statement either moments before or right around when members of the media had it dispersed to them as well. And after the Flames game in Buffalo last night, here's what Brad Treliving had to say.
Earlier this evening, I think you're aware, we received a letter from Bill Peters. It was a statement from Bill in the form of a letter to me, released through the media. We were sent obviously a copy of it just beforehand, so we're aware of it. We were dealing with our game here tonight. I just want to make the comment, over the course of the last 3 days, it's been a difficult 3 days for everyone. We've tried to be as open, as transparent as possible. This investigation we're doing, I know everybody wants everything done immediately, and the world we live in is immediate. We are not trying to stall or take time or drag our feet. It's a serious matter, and it's involving serious subject matter. And I just want to make sure that we are doing a thorough job in looking under every stone, rock, and doing all the things that need to be done. So the letter tonight is part of this that we will obviously review, and I'm hopeful that we will have an update for you tomorrow. I'm always hesitant to put timelines on things, but again, I hope you can appreciate the we're just trying to do everything we possibly can to make sure we do this right and we get all the information that needs to be getting. So with that, I just wanted to make sure that I spoke to you tonight and let you know we're aware of and got the same material you have tonight, and we'll be back to you soon with once we've concluded all of our investigation. Okay.
That's the last we've heard from Brad Treliving, living general manager of the Calgary Flames. I'm not sure if we'll hear something today. There's a couple of things from his statement last night, his address to the media, that I think are worth pointing out. Number one, he has made it clear time and time again that because of the severity of this issue and the serious nature of it, this has to be handled properly. There are certain steps that need to be taken in the investigation. I think that is fair. He also makes it very clear, and I think you can hear it through his tone, you can hear it through his words, they would like to have some finality here. If this were simply up to the Calgary Flames, I think they would love to get this done. They would love to make their statement. I think we all know where this is headed. There seems no logical or plausible way that Bill Peters is coaching this team again. I think they know that. I think Peters knows that. But this is in the hands of the lawyers right now. They would love to make their statement. I would think today, this is an off day for the Calgary Flames. They don't play again until Saturday. Players aren't going to be at the facility. I'm guessing they would love to get this done and begin the process of moving on. But this is going to play out over quite some time. Do we hear from Brad Treliving today? I'm not sure. I think they would like some finality. They would like the beginning of closure. I'm just not sure from a legal standpoint they're going to get that. We're going to hear from Brian Burke from a legal standpoint in a second. He's very uniquely qualified to comment on this particular situation, given his background as a lawyer, given the fact he was with that organization, given his relationship with Brad Treliving, and that of Bill Peters as well. Before we get to that, the latest development in the story is from Akeem Aliou this morning, who is going to meet with the NHL and issued this statement, and he made it very brief. He said, "I have read the statement of Bill Peters, which I found to be misleading, insincere, and concerning." He goes on to say, "I have accepted an invitation from the NHL to meet and discuss this situation. Out of respect for that process, I will not respond publicly to the statement or discuss the racism and discrimination that I have endured until after my meeting." He knew the series of events and the amount of attention this was going to receive the second he tweeted it. He knew that. And he knew what he was in for. And it's part of the reason that he did not go down this road earlier. There have been people asking questions this week. Why? Why did he wait this long? Why haven't we heard about this earlier? Because this becomes a massive story, and it completely overshadows what Akeem Aliou was pursuing, which was an NHL career. Got there for 7 games. The dream that he was chasing, it never panned out to the extent he wanted it to, but he continued to go down every road, every opportunity, every door that was open to him in professional hockey. But the second that this came out, he knew what he was in store for. So if you want a reason to why, you've had your reason answered time and time again by the player who has put himself at the forefront of this and knew what was coming on the flip side of it. So that's the latest statement. Brian Burke, as mentioned, uniquely qualified because of his background as a lawyer, because he has been with hockey operations, because he was with the Flames and knows Brad Treliving, knows Bill Peters. Here's what he had to say breaking down Bill Peters' statement last night.
Well, first off, there's new information in the letter, at least to us, as far as we were informed. The fact that he was confronted immediately after this unfortunate episode and apologized. That may not save him from the repercussions from this incident, but it certainly helps his case in terms of how it's perceived. So that's number one. Number two, no apology to Akeem Aliou. That's probably on advice of his counsel. No apology to the Blackhawks, for whom he worked at the time of the incident, and no apology to Carolina, which Elliott said he probably should have included Carolina for subsequent allegations, but I can tell you as his lawyer drafting the statement, I'd say we're not even going to bring those up. And I'm not sure there's any precedent for this case where a coach was fired due to a morals clause. Most coaching contracts include a morals clause, which requires the coach to act to a certain level of decorum. And if he doesn't, they can fire him for cause. I don't believe those clauses have been tested in the NHL, perhaps in other sports.
And that's where we find ourselves today, waiting for the next chapter. And I'm getting text messages already. You can hit me up. You've got the fan feedback line. You've got the text message inbox number. Send them in. Where are you at today? This comes from Bo. Dealt with 10 years ago. Is anyone listening? That's his claim. That's his claim that it was dealt with 10 years ago. There is a claim that was issued earlier that this was not dealt with at all. And in fact, in the original piece of reporting, which was fantastic by Frank Saravelli, Hakeem Elyous says, I think if we had had an apology at the time, I could have moved forward. So his claim is there was no apology. And I will say this, based on the statement that came out from Bill Peters last night and what has been made by Hakeem Elyous this morning, it does put those two players, if not more players who were on that roster, back at the forefront. Simone Pépin and Peter MacArthur were the two teammates who came forward earlier this week in that story by Frank Saravelli and said, yep, it happened. It did. Those words were used. You could hear a pin drop in the room. They corroborated Akeem's account of the event. So now the next question gets asked of them again. Okay, you've got a coach who's saying he immediately went back into the dressing room to apologize. Did that happen? Bill Peters' statement of this and his recollection of these events lead to that obvious question. And if those two guys answer on one side or the other, it changes the way that we're going to look at this. It doesn't change the finality. We know where this is headed. We know this is going. You might not agree with it. And Bo, I think you're a little confused, and I understand why. You followed up with the text, is Brenda Moore lying? They're two different events. And that's why this story has so many complex avenues and veins to it, because the Bill Peters original incident happened in Rockford with the Ice Hogs. The one Rod Brind'Amour commented on yesterday where he said it happened, it was dealt with internally, that's completely different. That's the one that has to deal with Bill Peters kicking a player on the bench, punching a player in the helmet. The physical abuse, and that happened with Carolina. That is different than what Calgary is dealing with right now. And Brian Burke went on to say, look, if I'm the Flames, that's not something that's even in my scope right now. I'm dealing with the racial component of this because that's the one that affects the appointment of Bill Peters here. He said, it's not that what happened in Carolina isn't a problem, but it's not the Flames' problem. That's what Brian Burke had to say on this. But you're right. I understand what you're saying about Rod Brind'Amour. That is a different incident, and that's why this is so complex, and that's why this is so confusing. And here we are today, finding out what the next chapter is, if or when it unfolds in Calgary. Elliot Friedman last night said there is a possibility that the league may still discipline Bill Peters independent of what Calgary chooses to do. And then there's the whole Carolina Hurricanes sidebar, which is waiting right now on Ron Francis to speak on the matter. There is a demand in Seattle for the new general manager of that franchise, who was the general manager at the time of the allegations in Carolina and the incident in Carolina. They want to hear from him. How was it dealt with? How did you guys move on from that? Because, yes, Rod Brind'Amour said the leadership group took it to management. It was handled internally. Rod Brind'Amour believes it was handled the right way. People are now asking Ron Francis for comment and the former owner. This is the next part of that chapter. The former owner of the Carolina Hurricanes has come out in the last 24 hours and said, if I had known about that, if I had known about the allegations of him kicking and punching a player on the bench, I would have fired him in a nanosecond. So Peter Karmanos Jr. is saying, I didn't know about that. It didn't go beyond management level. And he wants to hear from Ron Brind'Amour as well. So there's a lot going on here. And every day it feels like there's more going on. And as I said, we know where this is headed. We know what the conclusion is. We just don't know the twists and turns this is going to take in getting there. Oh, and by the way, the Flames won a hockey game last night. Like, for a team and for what you normally tune into this show for and for what I normally talk about, that was a big development for them, especially in the specter of all of this. and being under a microscope in a way that NHL players aren't used to. And Brendan Morrison is going to join me later in the show today, and he hasn't ever been on a team that's had this exact thing happen, but Brendan Morrison has been on a team where something much bigger than the game at hand was going on, and players were being asked about it constantly. And I do want to talk to Brendan Morrison about what it's like to deal with that and how you try to insulate yourself as far as your performance on your job goes, as opposed to the bigger picture and the bigger story and something everybody is talking about. He is, again, like Brian Burke has a very unique place in this. Brendan Morrison, he has a unique perspective on this, and he will join us in the second hour to talk about just that. So, yes, the Flames, they had to move on as far as their job goes last night, and they got a win with Jeff Ward filling in as their head coach. And the last thing they want to talk about is Bill Peters right now. They, I imagine, want resolution, but they don't want to talk about it. They want to try to have the respite of going to work, doing their job, the thing they're paid to do. No surprise to me, by the way, that Tkachuk and Lindholm were front and center in that game last night. Those have been the two guys who've showed up consistently for that team all year long. So who ties it? Tkachuk. Who wins it? Lindholm. No surprise. No surprise to me. I'm still trying to figure out what happened in Pittsburgh last night as well. The Penguins scored two, then the Canucks scored four, then the Penguins scored one, then the Canucks scored two, then the Penguins scored five. I guess if there were another period, the Canucks would have scored 10 based on the way that pattern worked out, but they end these things after three, and at that point it was 8-6. And the Canucks, in a game in which they led 6-3 in the third period, somehow found a way to not get a point out of Pittsburgh. They escaped the first period down 2-1. They had a dominant second period that gave them a 4-2 lead, and then, yeah, that 4-2 lead in the third and a 6-3 lead in the third, those evaporated. Geno Malkin was terrific last night. He was unreal. But the Canucks looked like a team that did not know how to handle the wave of momentum that swept over that building and the tidal wave that Malkin was leading in that game. That's what they looked like. That's a tough lesson to learn. That's a tough one to get out of and not even get a point. And they're not the first team, and Montreal is a club that went through this on Saturday, up 4-0 at home against the New York Rangers, and we feel better about the Penguins than the Rangers, but 6-3 lead, third period, you feel like you got to find a way to get at least a point out of that. And the Canucks come up empty and have to head to Edmonton for a double dip. First game Saturday in Edmonton, second game Sunday in Vancouver. Mini series against the Oilers coming up, and feels like it has somewhat more importance than just the points that'll be handed out because of the way that one went down last night in Pittsburgh. There's a lot to get to this morning, but it is Thursday. We do this every single Thursday. If you've got somebody for this, and I know who the obvious candidate is here, but we do take the L. Let's get to it.
But sometimes you gotta take a loss and have people rub it in your face before you get made pissed off. And keep plugging. It's your only
out. Yeah, we do take the L every single week. Who needs to take the L? Who in sports needs to take the L? And I know, as it pertains to the Calgary situation, maybe you have an obvious candidate. I'm not going to go down that road today. We're going to let this play out. We know that eventually Bill Peters is going to take the L with his job, but I understand why people probably want it to just be done with. He's also fighting for his reputation. He's fighting for his financial situation as well. So I'm not going to go down that road as far as take the L today. You know where I am going to go? I'm going to go with Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving, formerly the point guard in Cleveland, formerly the point guard in Boston, now the point guard in Brooklyn, and was not playing last night when the Brooklyn Nets made their first visit to Boston since Kyrie Irving signed with the Brooklyn Nets. So he wasn't there. How's he taking the L? I'll tell you how he's taking the L. Fans there, they're jaded. Boston's a tough crowd. Anybody who's ever been there, you know that whether it's Celtics, whether it's Bruins, whether it's Patriots, that's a tough crowd in that city. Red Sox fans, they're tough. And they went in on Kyrie Irving last night, even though he wasn't there. They chanted, "Where is Kyrie?" And they chanted, "Kyrie sucks," during the course of the game. And the reason they're so mad is because once he was traded out of Cleveland and he forced the trade to Boston, he directed it there, wanted to play there, and then last fall said, "Hey, I have every intent to sign in Boston again when my contract comes up next summer." Well, things happen in his life. Lost his grandfather. admitted to losing some love for the game, chose to sign in Brooklyn. So he signs in Brooklyn, and Brooklyn has to go back there for the first time, and Kyrie Irving isn't a part of it, but the fans chant that, and then he goes off in this tirade on Instagram last night. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the gist of it was like this. Hey, man, this is entertainment, and there are bigger things at play than a guy bouncing a ball and putting it in a hoop. This is just entertainment. You don't go in on people. Life is bigger than that. And he went, and listen, I don't actually disagree with Kyrie Irving's perspective. I think it's one that most of us should adhere to most times. Look, as much as you care about your team, as much as you care about the game, it is simply that. It's entertainment. It's a release. It's something you watch. Yes, it's something you care about, but it's not life. I joke about this all the time. We play in the sandbox every day on this show. That's what we do. We talk about sports, not about real stuff, which is why this week has seemed so heavy, given the situation that has received the most attention and for deserved reasons. So back to Kyrie Irving. So he goes on this rant about how life's more important, entertainment is not that. It's like, here's why he's taking the L. You can't only have that opinion when you lose. You can't expect the adoration of the fans, and you can't have the emotional response at the beginning of the season and talk about how important it is and have people call you a hero to them because of what you do on the court and expect all the adulation and all the endorsements and all the money and everything that comes with it. You can't be just on the good side of that. If you want to have this opinion, then you got to say that as well when everybody is bowing at your feet and worshiping you for the big shot you hit and what you've done for the franchise and what you represent. No. At that point, it's just entertainment as well. It's not life. Hey, it's just a game. If you want to play the hey, it's just a game card, you can't only play that when you lose. You can't only play that when times are tough. I'm not advocating people going after athletes. Them chanting that last night, I think, is on the fine side of the line. It's not something I would necessarily do, but fans are allowed to boo. Fans are allowed to jeer a little bit, as long as it doesn't get personal, as long as you don't cross certain lines. And from the chance that I saw last night in Boston, I didn't see that. If I missed something, if there was something that was completely personal, okay. I'm willing to walk back a little bit on this, but take the L, Kyrie Irving. Your submissions are coming in as well. I'll get to a couple of them. One of them's for Mason Rudolph, who is not starting this week. Someone said, Mason Rudolph, take the L, man, and improve. Good advice. We're going to turn our attention to the National Football League next. Triple header of games coming up. The first one kicks off in just a few minutes' time. We're going to head to Dallas. No team under more pressure today than the Dallas Cowboys. How much has Jason Garrett's situation changed in a week? Clarence Hill Jr. answers that question and more next right here on the Scott Rintoul Show.
Now more of the Scott Rintoul Show.
Let me just say this. I think all of us, including the fans, want to win a damn football game. Okay? Now, I know we've got a lot of other things to think about. Who's coaching? Who's playing? Who's compared to another player someplace else? How about let's win some ball games, folks? We can take that other stuff. I'm not known as a guy who gets hand cramps when I'm writing checks. But I want to win some football games.
I don't get hand cramps when I'm writing checks. Jerry's always got a one-liner tucked in there somewhere, doesn't he? That being Jerry Jones, of course, owner and general manager of the Dallas Cowboys. As I like to say, the GM there, he really likes the owner. And vice versa. They seem to have a really good relationship. I'm not sure where the relationship is with the head coach right now. Yeah, it is American Thanksgiving today, which means a trio of NFL football games. Scott Rintoul with you. This is the Scott Rintoul Show. All gets going momentarily in Detroit. The Lions are hosting the Bears. Not a lot of people excited about that game, understandably so. Unless you happen to be in on the Bears or you happen to be a diehard Lions fan, that's a tough watch, most likely, especially when you consider the most accomplished quarterback in the game is Mitch Trubisky. That's right. The most accomplished quarterback in that game is Mitch Trubisky. Here's how unheralded and unknown the starter for Detroit is. His name is David Blow, by the way. Or Blau, pardon me. We went through this. I had to watch highlights before the show today. David Blau is his name. But you can understand my confusion. Most people hadn't heard of this guy until yesterday or the day before. He is replacing Jeff Driskel, who was replacing Matt Stafford. Driskel not well enough to start this game, so it'll be David Blough who starts, former Purdue quarterback. Jason LaCanfora is dialed into everything in football. Guy's been doing this for a long time. He's one of the insiders in the sport. When he was on Sportsnet 960 this morning talking about this game, he wasn't sure how to pronounce this guy's name. And that's a guy who's dialed in. So this is how unheralded he is. So, yeah, it could be pretty ugly. If you're a Bears fan, you like that, you might get your record back to 500 because you're playing against this guy in the Detroit Lions today. That's the first game. But that's just your warm-up for likely the best game of the day, or at least has the potential to be the best game of the day, depending on what Atlanta does tonight. Bills and Cowboys goes this afternoon. And we're going to talk more about this in just a second with Clarence Hill Jr. He's a Cowboys insider. He's done this for a long time. He's covered this team for a very long time. Dallas, there's some pressure. That team, given its makeup, given its roster, given the star power, it should be better than 6-5. But it's not. It's coming off the heels of a disappointing 13-9 win in New England. You can lose to New England. Most teams do. But there's a way to lose, and Dallas didn't lose that way. They went down with a whimper, and they went down with questions about coaching, and they went down with questions about whether they can get it done in big games. Not something you want following you around, and that has more to do with the coach than it does to do with the players, but it's all lumped into one. Then come the Bills, the upstart 8-3 Bills that everybody has the same question about. Yeah, but can they beat a real team? Well, they get to find out today. Josh Allen's playing a real team, and he's playing Dallas on Thanksgiving in Dallas. That defense is going to get after it today. Could be a great game today. As mentioned, the third game of the day features the Saints at the Falcons. But without further ado, Clarence Hill Jr. covers the Cowboys for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and joins us now on the line to talk some Cowboys, to talk some Bills. Clarence, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you guys doing?
Hey, we're doing very well, and happy Thanksgiving to you and everybody south of the border. We get to reap the benefits, not necessarily the food, but we get to reap the football benefits that you give us on this great day.
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. It's always a big Thanksgiving Day tradition here in Dallas with the game. And I saw you leading up. You're saying the Bills are playing a real team today?
Well, that's what I'm led to believe based on the roster. The record might not indicate that, but that's what I'm led to believe, Clarence, based on the roster. I guess that's one of the questions in Dallas. Is this a real team?
Yeah, you know, that's the question. They're trying to find out. They don't know who they are. They're 6-5. They haven't beat a team with a winning record. They've only beaten the bad teams. They haven't beaten any good teams. So, you know, we don't know. And as I look at the Bills' schedule, who have they beaten? But they're 8-3.
Can't take away any of those wins from them. You tell me, you've covered this game, the Thanksgiving game for Dallas, for a lot of years. What kind of pressure is there year in, year out on this day, on Thanksgiving Day in Dallas on the Cowboys?
No, there's usually not a lot of pressure because the Cowboys usually win on Thanksgiving. It's always a good time, and it's a fun event. Jerry has turned it into the concert, the things for the Salvation Army. It's a fun tradition for the people here and the players and everybody in their family. They're used to it. I'd say there's more pressure this year just because of what Jerry said last week after the Patriots game and went scorched earth on the coaches. And, you know, I really believe that, you know, Jason's done in Dallas, and if he loses to the Bills, he may be done on Friday.
You think they could make that move midseason and they wouldn't wait till the end of the year?
Well, anything is possible. Jerry's very upset. And, you know, he built this team to win. Yes, Jason was put on notice before the season and was playing without a contract and needed to win and get far. But 6-5 or 6-6 is not acceptable considering the money he spent in the offseason, the players he acquired, the midseason trade for Michael Bennett. You know, they truly believe that this team has the talent, the most talent they've ever had since the 90s. And to be floundering like this is unacceptable.
Clarence Hill Jr. covers the Cowboys. He'll be at the game today in Dallas. He joins me here on the Scott Rintoul Show. You look at that roster. To you, what is the biggest reason that the sum of the parts hasn't added up to more than 6-5 so far?
Well, I mean, again, you have to point to coaching. You know, the coaching blunders, coaching mistakes, whether it's a young coach, an offensive coordinator not getting it done, or whatever else, but the talent is here. and they haven't gotten in production for whatever reason. You look at the numbers; they have the number one ranked offense, and you know, as far as yards, Dak is playing out of his mind. The defense is a top 10 defense, and the numbers don't suggest a 6-5 team. You know, possibly heads to 6-6 if they continue to trend on not beating a team with the winning record. You know, the talent, the production is better than what the result is, and you have to say that the biggest reason is coaching.
Jason Garrett has been there for a long time. He doesn't offer a lot of resistance. He doesn't push back against Jerry Jones. It's part of the reason he stayed employed for so long. How does a coach have to be wired to handle that job in that market?
Well, I mean, yeah, the pressure of the job, the pressure of the market, the pressure of the tradition is here. You know, being able to navigate owner, GM, having press conferences. Jerry, you know, talks to the media after every game. He has two press conferences a week. His son, Stephen Jones, has two press conferences a week. You know, a lot of coaches like, you know, it to be one voice and it to come from the coach. And so they may be contradicting each other, you know, with messages to the media and to the fans. To, you know, when the coach is saying one thing and the owner is saying one thing and the owner's son is saying another thing or whatever else. But that's what it is. They come with the dinner with the Cowboys. And that's part of the situation. You know, Jason has been here. He played under Jimmy Johnson. He won Super Bowls there. He knows Jerry. He knows the environment, which is why he was a perfect fit, which is why Jerry, you know, has allowed him to last for so long without the wins. And Jerry truly wants him to succeed because, you know, he allows Jerry to be Jerry. You bring in another coach, and they may balk in this situation. It's tough for you to get a hard-nosed traditional football coach to want to come into this environment. So, you know, those are the things that lie ahead. Who would you get to replace Jerry, and who can fit in this scenario?
Well, and you look at some of the coaches that have been there, and the first one that comes to mind, a guy who came from the college ranks, is Jimmy Johnson. And Jimmy had the personality that he could handle the market, and obviously he brought the swag with him, and he brought Super Bowls with him as well. One of the rumors out there right now, and who knows how long Jason Garrett is in that job, but one of the rumors is if Jason Garrett is eventually fired, Lincoln Riley, he might be the apple of Jerry's eye. Does he seem like a guy to you who is wired to handle that market?
Yeah, I don't know, because he's, you know, he went from coordinator to head coach in Oklahoma in a college town, a college situation, you know, is the hot guy. But the scrutiny in Oklahoma and when you get ready-made quarterbacks to come in, Heisman Trophy winners to come in, is not the same as the NFL, and it's not the same as Dallas. But certainly everybody loves Lincoln Riley and what he's done at Oklahoma and the type of offense he brings and the imagination and all that other stuff. You know, it certainly will be someone that the Cowboys would be interested in, but you also have to look at a guy like Matt Rhule at Baylor and what he's done. He's a guy that came from Temple who NFL teams have been interested in as well, and the job he's done at Baylor is maybe better than what Lincoln's done because of where Baylor came from after the Art Briles era with no one going there and to make them competitive and relevant again. It just says you everything you need to know about the type of coach that Matt Rhule is. And, you know, Urban Meyer has expressed interest in the job. I would look like at a guy like Greg Roman up at the Baltimore offensive coordinator, what he did with Colin Kaepernick and what he's done with Lamar Jackson. Here's a guy that I think teams are going to be after the season. And you know, maybe if Carolina moves away from, you know, Ron Rivera, you know, Riverboat Ron may be a guy that the Cowboys look at.
Clarence Hill Jr., talking football with him on this Thanksgiving Day in the United States. Three games on tap, including the Cowboys hosting the Buffalo Bills. It looks like the Cowboys are going to win that division almost by default. Nobody's in on Philly, even at 6-5. People say, yeah, it's still the best team in the division. They're going to the playoffs. I know nothing so uncertain is a sure thing, but I digress. Throw out the record for a second. Throw out 6-5 for a second. When you compare the Cowboys to the rest of the NFC, which includes the Saints and the 49ers and the Seahawks and the Packers and the Vikings, where do you put the Cowboys in that mix?
Well, they have to be behind all of them, for sure. You know, again, the Cowboys have the talent. They, you know, believe they should have beaten the Saints, and they think they should have beaten the Vikings. They think that, you know, they really had a chance to beat, you know, Green Bay. They think, you know, you look on paper, they have the talent to compete with all of them. except those teams are 9-2 and 8-3, and the Cowboys are 6-5, and the Cowboys have a loss to the Jets on their resume. How the heck do you lose to the Jets with that type of talent? So, you know, the thing about it is that even if the Cowboys somehow survive the Eagles, who are just as big of a mess right now compared to what we thought they should have been at the start of the season, who has any hope that they're going to beat any of these teams in the playoffs if they make the playoffs? You know, whether if they host a playoff game, you're going to get either the Seahawks or you know, depending on who doesn't win that division out there, Seahawks or San Francisco or somebody like Minnesota to come back here at AT&T Stadium, and the Cowboys have shown no evidence that they can win those games. You know, and so that's the question. And that's the big question coming into this Thursday game. You know, can you beat a team with a winning record? You have the Bills on tap. Can they do it?
Has Dak Prescott proven during the course of this season that he is the most important player on that offense? Because most people believed it was Ezekiel Elliott coming in.
No, this is a Dak offense. This is a Dak team. You know, the Cowboys have made that transition, and that should be. And Dak has shown that he can have that. He's leading the NFL in passing yards and among the top in all the other categories. Has shown that you know, he can step back. He's taken a lot of growth. He's not just a bus driver anymore. He's a leading man at quarterback, and he's shown that, you know, obviously he doesn't have a signature win this year. You know, that was one of the big things going into last week's game. Obviously everybody in Dallas believes if it wasn't a monsoon, you know, it would have been a different outcome. You know, but again, he needs to take that next step with Jason Garrett, you know, at least starting, you know, with Buffalo and you got Chicago and you got the Rams. You know, if at some point you guys are going to have to step up and beat somebody to earn your money and earn your keep.
You mentioned Kellen Moore earlier. He's in his rookie season as offensive coordinator with the Dallas Cowboys, and it started great, and Dak was putting up these massive numbers. You mentioned the fact he has more passing yards than any quarterback in football, so this may seem like a strange question to ask, but are they getting the most out of Dak Prescott this season, or is there still more there?
I mean, I think they're getting the most out of Dak Prescott. I mean, you look at the numbers and what he's done and where he ranks. I mean, I think that the thing that frustrates people watching the Cowboys and watching Dak Prescott is he doesn't do enough with his feet, you know, and he can be more dynamic with his feet. You look back at that Patriots game in that weather, you know, and there are opportunities where he could have made some plays with his feet, a la Russell Wilson and some other guys. And certainly you remember that Lamar Jackson tore the Patriots up with his legs. And not to say that Dak is the type of runner that he is or has his suddenness, but, you know, he can make some plays with his feet and to do some more things there. But he's shown that he has the arm to make all the throws and can do that. So they're getting that out of him. You know, they just need – you know, sometimes in crunch time, you need to take off, you know, and break a team back, you know, with your feet, kind of like Russell does at times. But Dak has shown that he is their franchise quarterback, and he's going to be their franchise quarterback for years to come.
What about Amari Cooper? Jerry going to write the big check for him?
Well, that's it. Those are the two checks that are out there, Dak and Cooper, you know, and they want to keep them. And so that's the question. Neither have signed. They had hoped to sign both before the season. They're not letting either one of them get out of here for sure. You know, so I looked at, for them certainly at the start of the season, try to sign one and franchise one. They can't sign both. But they're committed to bringing both back and pairing them together for years to come.
In conversation with Clarence Hill Jr. in advance of the Cowboys and Bills this afternoon, the middle game of the trio we will see today on American Thanksgiving. What do you make of an 8-3 Bills team that makes its way into Dallas today?
Well, again, it's the team that finds a way to win. I mean, they're not pretty, you know. And again, I've looked at their schedule and looked at their record and looked at the teams they've played, and you know, they're not explosive on offense, and they have no impressive wins. And the Eagles, I think, put 30 on them, you know, in a loss. And beat them by double digits, but they're 8-3, you know, and you look at the rest of their schedule, and they're not a lot of tough teams except maybe one more rematch with the Patriots, but, you know, they can navigate. They can still get the 10 wins and make the playoffs out of the AFC. No matter what they do today against the Cowboys, you can't take that away from them. But again, they have a returner that could take advantage of this Cowboys team that's not special on returns, and certainly that was one of the things that drew Jerry's ire last week. They're awful special teams. They have a running back. you know, that can make a play against the Cowboys defense that struggled against the run is going to be playing without their best run interior lineman, and Antoine Woods, a quarterback that's mobile, that they can make plays with his feet. Cowboys have struggled getting mobile quarterbacks on the ground. So, you know, there are plays out there to be made, and obviously this defense is pretty good. Is number three in the league against the pass. So the Cowboys have to earn this thing against the Bills team again that people in Dallas don't think is that good, but they're 8-3 and the Cowboys are 6-5. And of course, we can't forget that Cole Beasley, former Cowboys receiver, is coming back for his revenge game, and so he's going to be amped up to have a good game against his former team.
Well, speaking of amped up, as much as we've got three games today, and Chicago scored the first touchdown on Thanksgiving, Mitch Trubisky with the touchdown pass to Allen Robinson to open that game, as much as we've got this today, everybody's looking forward to that. San Francisco 49ers, Baltimore Ravens game, that defense against Lamar Jackson. What to you is your biggest question you want answered in that game in particular this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's a possible Super Bowl preview. And who saw that coming before the season? San Francisco, I remember in the preseason, we were questioning whether they were all in on their quarterback and whether he was going to be their future. And Baltimore, you didn't know what you could make it a Ravens and how Lamar Jackson was going to do in his second year. Well, I remember, you know, the playoff game last year when San Diego, you know, shut him down and shut that offense down. And you wondered, and now they've been the two best teams in the NFL at this point through this part of the season. And so that's a great game. And I want to see Lamar against that defense. That may be the best defense he's faced. And with all due respect to the Patriots, with all due respect to the Patriots defense, they have the numbers, but I don't know if they played a lot of explosive offenses. And when they did play an explosive offense in Baltimore, and they got run through. But that 49ers defense line is real. You know, those guys are real over there. And I'd like to see, you know, Lamar against that defensive line of San Francisco.
Hey, Clarence, great stuff. Happy Thanksgiving. On the Thanksgiving feast table, what is the first thing you're reaching for today?
Oh, man, I'm turkey, man. Turkey and greens.
I like it. I like it a lot. Hey, enjoy the food, enjoy the football, and thank you very much for doing this today. Really appreciate the time.
Yes, sir. Thank you, man.
That is Clarence Hill Jr., covers the Dallas Cowboys for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, and there is so much wrapped up in that situation with the owner and the coach, and everybody's watching Jason Garrett and saying, well, you're not going to be the guy anymore. It's just a matter of when, not if. The only way he keeps his job, some people think, is if he wins a Super Bowl. That seems to be a pretty high bar. Could he keep his job if he won multiple playoff games down there, which is possible without winning a Super Bowl? If Dallas ends up slotted where it looks like they will, they're going to be probably the fourth team of the four division winners. That's what it's looking like right now, which means you're hosting the fifth place team. That's what they did with Seattle a year ago, got over in that game. Dak won it with his legs late and moved on. They lost the very next week. But if they improve, if they win the first round and the second round, but don't get over in the NFC Championship game, would that be enough to keep Jason Garrett's job? I don't know. Jerry's a loyal guy, as Clarence pointed out. He wants Jason Garrett to succeed, and yet everybody's pointing the finger in that direction. What's the next move you can make? You've got your quarterback. You just signed your big running back. You're trying to get things done with Amari Cooper. You made your big linebacker signing as well. Yeah, the next thing to change, if you don't get what you want, is the coach. And Jason Garrett has been there for a long time. As mentioned, Thanksgiving Day football is underway. The Chicago Bears are now a convert away from being tied up. David Blau is 1-for-2 and has just thrown a 75-yard touchdown pass to Kenny Golladay. So there you go. We got some early fireworks. I thought this was going to be a field goal kicking fest. I really did. Not a great offense in Chicago, and that's flattering. Rookie making his first start. How's that going to go against the Bears' D? Probably not very well. Well, they've each had the ball once, and we are a convert away from being tied at 7, and we are less, and the convert is good. Here we go. 7-7. We are less than 4 minutes into that game. 11:01 remaining in the first of three games here. Bears and Lions, Bills and Cowboys. The one that I didn't really get to is the Saints and Falcons, which sets up record-wise as a blowout, but the Falcons just destroyed the Saints a couple of weeks ago. 3 weeks ago, they just ran New Orleans shop. Now, the Falcons didn't look very good last week. They regressed. They went back to the form they've displayed most of the season. But the 2 weeks that included a big win over the Saints, a big win over the Panthers, all of a sudden they look pretty good. All of a sudden they look pretty good. So there's a chance that the nightcap is a decent game. There's a chance. Don't know for sure, but there's a chance. You know, New Orleans is going to show up in that game, even though they didn't the last time these two teams met. They'll be better today. My big question for the Saints, can they get Alvin Kamara going? Can they get that guy being the explosive player we know he can be? That's the element that's been missing from that offense. Michael Thomas, some people have him in the MVP conversation right now. He's a fifth type of guy, but he's in that conversation with what he's done, with receptions, with yards, with everything, leading the NFL in that category with two different quarterbacks throwing him the rock this year. But if they don't get Alvin Kamara going, I'm not sure they can beat the heavyweights of the NFC. That defense has looked good, but I'm not sure there's enough offensively for them if they don't get it going there. A big second hour coming your way, one that includes Brendan Morrison, some unique insight to what these players might be going through in Calgary. It's coming up next on the Scott Rintoul Show.
Welcome to the Scott Rintoul Show.
Into the right circle, the team with a one-timer, he scores! Fourth consecutive goal for the Pittsburgh Penguins as Chris Letang beats Demko for the top of the right circle. And Pittsburgh leads 7-6 with 3:06 left in the third.
This question comes up periodically. It might come up once a month. It might come up once every couple. What's the worst way to lose? And maybe it's just, hey, if you lose, they're all the same. You didn't win, so it doesn't matter when it comes to professional sports. I'm not talking about amateurs. I'm talking about professional sports. Scott Rintoul with you here. Thanks for joining me on this Thursday morning. We'll help your day. We'll get you through it. And happy American Thanksgiving to those of you who may be listening somewhere south of the border. Vancouver Canucks last night have one of those games you will not forget. If you're a Canucks fan and you watched that game last night, you won't forget that one. Your team up 6-3. Gives up the next five. In fact, six third period goals against in total. Pittsburgh scored last night. 8-6 the final. So is that the worst way to lose? That's a bad way to lose. When you find a way to swing the momentum in a game after being down early and you're leading 4-2 early in the third, you're leading 6-3 in the third, and then somehow, some way, it all falls apart. And the next thing you know, you don't even get a point out of that game. I mean, if you're a Canucks fan and you see a 6-3 scoreline midway through the third period, you're thinking, okay, worst, they're getting a point out of this. But that would be worst-case scenario. They should be able to see this out. It's three goals. I know Pittsburgh's good, but... So that's a tough way to lose last night. And the players, you'll hear from JT Miller and what they're saying. The players are pretty down about it after the game. He, in particular, was pretty sour about the way that went down. That's one way to lose. There's the way that Detroit lost last night, which was you had your doors blown off from the get-go, and basically the other side sits guys down, rests guys, however you want to look at that third period for the Leafs. But it was ugly early and often for the Detroit Red Wings. Toronto came in there. They're undefeated under Sheldon Keefe. Third straight win, 6-0 over the Detroit Red Wings in Detroit. Goalie gets hurt in the process. How about that goaltending situation? I don't care if you're a Red Wings fan or not. You had to feel bad for the Red Wings in that game last night. Probably easy for most people because they're not big Leafs fans, so they probably had a little bit of emotional support for the Red Wings heading in. Jimmy Howard, it's 2-0 at the time. He goes down to make a save, and he hurts himself. I don't know if it was his groin, if it was part of his lower leg at the time, but he hurt himself to the extent, or he felt something tweaked to the extent that he couldn't get up on the play. So he's down on his pads trying to make the next save. Tavares scores. It's 3-0, and Howard can't continue. That's it. Well, they have to wait 6 minutes for the backup to get in, and that's because Jonathan Bernier was so sick before the game that he wasn't even on the bench. They didn't want him around the guys. Well, this is going to be Jimmy Howard's night, except he gets hurt, and now Bernier has to get ready to go, and he's feeling awful heading into the game. I felt bad for the Red Wings. I know every team gets injuries and stuff happens, but man, you got to throw a guy who's sick as a dog into that game? That's tough sledding. So that's a bad way to lose. You get your doors blown off, your goalie gets hurt, and it's over from the outset, and you're just playing out the string. And then there's the way that Nashville lost last night. Nashville's a team that, much like the Flames recently, much like the Canucks recently, been doing a lot of losing. And at some point, you need a win. It's like the one Calgary got in the weekend. Didn't play great, but found a way to win. And you'll take it. You don't care. Just give me those 2 points. Don't care. Just take the two and run. And that's kind of where Nashville is right now. They've given up a lot of goals. And there they are playing Vegas, another team that's been middling to start the season. 500 record going into last night, 11-11-4. And they've got Nashville's got the lead. They've got Vegas down late in that game. And a buzzer-beater goal. Max Pacioretty scores a buzzer-beater. One of those you've got to review to see if there was enough time left on the clock. 19:59 and change. That's when Max Pacioretty gets the tying goal. Then you go to overtime and lose. And you lose on a 2-on-0 in overtime. We saw earlier this year the Vancouver Canucks allowed a 3-on-0 in overtime. Pretty rare. 2-on-0 is pretty rare as well. So you tell me, out of those three, which is the worst way to lose? You blow the lead in the third period of a game you thought you should be able to see out. You're done from the get-go. Or is it that last way? Right at the buzzer gets taken away from you. Hey, Nashville gets a point, but you really needed a win, and you were less than a second away, and it crumbles just there and then. Which is the worst of those three to lose? Detroit Lions might want to keep this kid employed. Marvin Jones has the touchdown, second touchdown pass of the game for David Blau. The vaunted Bears defense, not looking great on the Lions' first two possessions. It is now 14-7 in favor of Detroit as the first of three Thanksgiving games is underway in Detroit. Obviously, a lot of focus on the Bill Peters situation as well around hockey, and deservedly so. We're all waiting to see if something happens today. You'll hear from Brad Treliving in just a couple of minutes. It's the last time we heard from him. He made a relatively extensive statement after the game last night, after this letter went out. And we are getting feedback on this. Hit me up. This one comes in from Zachary and says he appreciates the focus on the Bill Peters situation, and he thinks on this show we've been doing a pretty good job of being balanced with the things that it's bringing to light. One thing that Zach has observed is that most, if not almost all, the people giving commentary and comparing what was said and who it was directed at have failed to realize is that a coach or a person in a position of authority criticizing your talent, effort, or decision-making, that's one thing. Derisive racial commentary holding a meaning and purpose completely different than using criticism to motivate. I agree with that completely. Zachary goes on to say slurs such as those attributed to Coach Peters used to dehumanize the individual or group they're directed at, regardless of one is ignorant of their ignorance of what is packed into that racial epithet, is not even the same universe of meaning or effect. Making that distinction might be appropriate. I think it's a really good point to bring up, and there is some, I'm not going to say confusion because it's not confusion, but there are conflicting accounts right now of what went down with the Rockford IceHogs. Bill Peters last night, if you are late to this story, if you didn't see the letter, if you're just getting in on this today. So Bill Peters issues a statement last night. And within that statement, which was an apology of sorts, it was a general apology to those negatively affected by his words. That was the reading in the letter. There's an admission of using what in the letter was termed offensive language. We know that Hakeem Aliyu has said that he dropped the N-word multiple times during the course of this. There is a claim that Peters immediately returned to the dressing room to apologize to the team after using said language. That's his claim. That's what he said in this statement that came out last night. And that is in direct conflict to the initial reporting that we've seen on the Hakeem Aliyu situation. And Peters says, and I think this applies to the email Zachary just sent in, that the offensive language was directed at no one in particular, which, again, Aliyu has alleged much differently, that it was Peter who was the one playing the music, and that when Bill Peters said what he said about the type of music and used the N-word and used it to describe the music, he was talking directly to Akeem Elu, an African-Canadian. So that word, as much as any person should despise it, that word hits a lot differently. And Zachary is dead on with that point. I could not agree more. And whether Bill Peters knew how that was going to land or thought that he was just describing the music doesn't matter. Can't use that word. I think everybody's lockstep there. You can't go down that road. But now we're waiting to find out if a couple of these teammates who've corroborated Akeem Elu's story will corroborate his account of it, or whether they will say, well, he did come back into the dressing room and try to apologize. I don't know what happened. There were a lot of people that saw that statement last night as simply legalese, simply disingenuous, but what you have to say if you are trying to salvage a part of your reputation and certainly the financial components of your contract right now. So now, Simone Pepin, Peter MacArthur, those are the two guys who've been named that corroborated Akeem Elu's account. They're going to be called on again. Was there an apology offered? We'll wait and see. We'll wait and see where this goes. Akeem Elu has put out a statement today, and in case you didn't hear that, that is the next chapter. While we wait to see when Calgary is going to talk, the statement that Elu put out was this: I've read the statement of Bill Peters, which I found to be misleading, insincere, and concerning. Misleading, obviously, pointing at some of the facts that I've just detailed for you. Insincere, overall tone, and concerning. Completely understand the use of that word as well. Elu has accepted an invitation from the NHL to meet and discuss the situation, and he will not respond publicly to the statement beyond what he put out today or discuss the racism and discrimination he's endured until after his meeting with the NHL. And Elliot Friedman made a very good point about this last night, too. The Calgary Flames have this situation to deal with. They're conducting their investigation, and we know what conclusion they're going to come to. We just don't know how they're going to get there and how that termination looks. I'm not sure there's anyone out there that is thinking there's even a sliver of a possibility Bill Peters coaches again. It's a matter of when, not if. But the NHL can still step in here, and they have the power within this league and within the rules they've set forth to discipline Bill Peters as well. And they're going to want to talk to him, and we're going to see where this goes. So there's still a lot of layers in all of this. And while there is a lot that we have going on in sports, and yes, I'm going to talk NFL, and yeah, I'm going to talk about what happened on ice last night and where people are in the Pacific Division and all those sorts of things, where teams are, I should say, it's a big story. And there's a reason it's consuming us, and there's a reason that a lot of these conversations are coming out right now. One of the things that has been sent in repeatedly, and I believe it's from a minority, I wouldn't say it's overwhelmed us on our FAD feedback line or on our text message inbox, but one of the things that's been sent in repeatedly is, listen, things happened, but they made me a better person. They made me a better man. I had to endure some tough times. And I'm not sure why people haven't come to the realization that, well, one person might consider tough love or what is being termed right now as mental abuse or emotional abuse or whatever you want to take it to, in some cases physical abuse, with what happened in Carolina and what people have alleged has happened in other hockey situations as well. It doesn't affect everybody the same way. And that's part of the realization of this conversation that needs to occur. That's part of this. And coaches are always, I hope, and I'll bet you they're doing it right now, coaches are always evaluating, okay, how does this impact my players? How do I get the most out of them? Is this going to motivate everybody? How do I get through to that guy who I haven't seemed to be able to reach? And that's part of this conversation as well. And hopefully at the end of this conversation, or at least when it dies down a little bit and we've had some of the difficult discussions, my hope is we come out of it with better coaches. My hope is we come out of it with a better understanding of how to treat people in general. But it's going to be tough to get there. And there's going to be some hard truths that have to be faced. And there are going to be some more people that eventually get called on the carpet and have some explaining to do. That's where we're going. Somebody texting in, Bill Peters is looking out for Bill Peters. Yeah, and his name's on it. And you can argue whether it's the lawyers or whether it's him. But yes, that's fair. That's fair. And whether it's because he's doing this on his lawyer's advice or not, that's their job. The people he employs to represent him, that's their job in this situation. And you might not like their job. You might not like their messaging, but that's what they are paid to do. We have a guy who's a lawyer. Going to hear from him in just a minute. Let's get to what they're saying.
Bro, what are you talking about, man?
What are you saying?
Not saying anything.
You're saying something?
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooksy.
Here's what they're saying.
While we wait for the next shoe to drop and we wait for the next twist and turn in this saga, I do think it's important that you hear what Brad Treliving had to say after the game last night. It's the last chance we've had to hear from him. And who knows, maybe we hear something more today. But after that statement from Bill Peters came out and the Flames took care of business in overtime against Buffalo last night, Brad Treliving, prior to the Flames flying home, had this to say to the assembled media.
Earlier this evening, I think you're aware, we received a letter from Bill Peters. It was a statement from Bill in the form of a letter to me, released through the media. We were sent obviously a copy of it just beforehand, so we're aware of it. We were dealing with our game here tonight. I just want to make the comment, over the course of the last 3 days, it's been a difficult 3 days for everyone. We've tried to be as open, as transparent as possible. This investigation we're doing, I know everybody wants everything done immediately, and the world we live in is immediate. We are not trying to stall or take time or drag our feet. It's a serious matter, and it's involving serious subject matter. And I just want to make sure that we are doing a thorough job in looking under every stone, rock, and doing all the things that need to be done. So the letter tonight is part of this that we will obviously review, and I'm hopeful that we will have an update for you tomorrow. I'm always hesitant to put timelines on things. But again, I hope you can appreciate we're just trying to do everything we possibly can to make sure we do this right and we get all the information that needs to be getting. So with that, I just wanted to make sure that I spoke to you tonight. And let you know we're aware of and got the same material you have tonight, and we'll be back to you soon with once we've concluded all of our investigation. Okay.
So we may hear something today. I'm sure the Flames would love to have part of the closure of this situation taken care of today, but I'm not sure we're getting there. Brad Treliving's not sure we're getting there. His legal team is assembled right now, and this is the part of the job you can't plan for. Crisis management. You just can't plan. You have to find out in the moment. You can prepare yourself all you want, but you don't know the types of crisis your organization may have. This fits that category. It's much different than the type of crisis management in a medical capacity the Flames had to go through just a couple of weeks ago with TJ Brody. And that, fortunately, has had a positive outcome. But when you are in crisis management, you do your best at the time, on the best advice of people, and you navigate your way through. And that's where they are right now. It's not the same in Carolina. They're dealing with different allegations with Bill Peters there, and Rod Brindamore had to address that yesterday, and everybody's waiting for Ron Francis to speak in Seattle because he was the general manager at the time that the alleged physical abuse, the kicking and the punching, took place. And again, I don't want to just use those blanket terms. There's an allegation that he kicked Michael Jourdan. That has been confirmed by Rod Brindamore. There's an allegation of a punch in the helmet of another player. At one point in time, Brindamore basically conceded that those things happened. Leadership group in Carolina took it to management, and he believed that it was dealt with properly, and they were able to move on from there. But Ron Francis, the guy in question, hasn't spoken. And since that time, Peter Karmanos Jr. has come out. He's the owner of the team at the time and said, if I'd known about that, Peters would have been fired and he would have been gone. It would have been it in a nanosecond, was the quote he had. So there's another branch to this story that is being dealt with in a different capacity and at a different crisis management level than they're dealing with in Calgary. Brian Burke, uniquely positioned to comment on this. He's obviously a broadcaster now, but he was the president of the Flames. He knows Brad Treliving very well. He knows Bill Peters. He is also a lawyer. Here's what he had to say about where we're at. This was on the morning radio show today in Vancouver.
There's three levels here. One is racist rhetoric is unacceptable at any time, anywhere. It's not enough to apologize for it. It's not enough to say it was a one-off. It's not enough to say it was a mistake. It's unacceptable. It has no place in sports. So that's number one. Number two would be cruelty from a coach, which is, you can interpret that spectrum. Mike, you played far enough back that I can tell you when I played high school football and high school hockey, what was said to me would never be tolerated today, the things that were said to me. Coach grabbed me by the shoulders and slammed me against the glass in hockey practice. Coach would routinely grab your face mask in football, pull you in close and tell you how stupid you were. So the physical abuse thing comes in there. Cruelty comes in there. To me, those are the three levels. And to me, the first one can never happen. The second one should never happen. And the third one is always going to happen. It's subject to what you call cruelty.
And that's part of the discussion we're having right now as well. And that was on Sportsnet 960 this morning with Boomer and the boys. Berkey said something very similar with James Cebulski and Perry Salkowski on Vancouver radio this morning as well. Yeah, there are three levels to this story, and I think Berkey is absolutely right. And the first one is intolerable, and that's what they're dealing with in Calgary. The second one, the physical abuse, that should never happen, as Brian said, and that's what they're dealing with in Carolina and by proxy Seattle as well because of Ron Francis's employment there. It's not a Seattle issue, but it's a Ron Francis issue that he needs to address at some point in time. And then there's the third part of it, and what is considered cruelty, what is not, and I think Brian is right. That is something that is probably never going to be eradicated completely, and it's an ongoing discussion about what is acceptable, what is not. And things that used to be acceptable, as Brian pointed out there, they are no longer acceptable, and it's a good thing that they're no longer acceptable. But this is an evolving discussion. Hopefully we get better as each day, each year goes by, and 10 years from now, we may look back at things that were done in 2019 and say, I can't believe they did that. How did nobody recognize that at the time? How did people accept that at the time? That's part of this ongoing discussion. As mentioned, there's hockey going on as well. Vancouver Canucks, that's a tough one to take last night in Pittsburgh. Blow a 6-3 lead in the third period, lose 8-6 to Evgeny Malkin and the Pittsburgh Penguins. If you want a pretty good idea of how that locker room was after the game, have a listen to JT Miller.
They just wanted to win more than we did, I think, most of the night. We had a really good start to the second. We jumped on board and dominated. And then sat back. They just got so many grade A chances today. They have too many good players to not score.
JT Miller at one point had to excuse himself from the scrum at the end. Said, guys, I don't have much more to say. I don't want it to be too negative. He was fired up. He was mad. He was really mad that one got away because that's one of those, I thought we learned this lesson. I thought we got it, but we're not quite there yet, and there's more tough lessons for us to learn. There's people chiming in. I ask you, what's the worst way to lose? Got this on Twitter for sure, blowing a 6-3 lead out of the situations I outlined for you earlier. That is by far the worst way to lose. You can continue to weigh in. Hit me up. You've got the fan feedback line. You've got the text message inbox number as well. Brendan Morrison, what's it like as a player when you are dealing with a situation that is bigger than just the game? Find out next right here on the Scott Rintoul Show.
Now more of the Scott Rintoul Show.
Winding up over the line, works in, Kachuk with a shot. That was off the stick of Johansson. Here's a chance, Lindholm, backhand, scores! Lindholm in overtime! Touch it in, and the Flames finish off the this road trip with a 3-2 OT win in Buffalo.
Flames get it done on the ice last night. Some sort of solace for them, given the situation that they're dealing with, even though the players don't really want to talk about it. The more difficult aspect is it's going to continue to be asked about. And you can say I'm not commenting on that situation, but that still becomes a part of the burden. Brendan Morrison has lived through that, not that exact situation that's going on in Calgary right now, but one where there was a bigger story to those asking the questions than the game, than the result, than going through a goal-scoring slump. Any of those things that we normally talk about with reference to sports and professional athletes and hockey in particular. Scott Rentoul with you. Asking you earlier what kind of loss is the worst loss. Brett in Red Deer says, hey, all losses hurt, but getting blown up from the start, at least you have time to come to terms with it. So by the end of the game, it's easier to swallow. That's what happened to the Red Wings last night. That's one way to look at it. He continues by saying, losing on a buzzer beater hurts, but you knew it just takes one shot, one bounce to lose the lead. Losing when you're up by three in the third and not even getting a point, that hurts the most because you thought the W was in the bank. I tend to agree. It's a tough lesson to learn for the Vancouver Canucks last night, and it's one that they had a long plane ride. I believe they're flying today to Edmonton to deal with. Got to think about that. I'm sure they came up with a method or two to try to wash away the taste of that loss last night in Pittsburgh. I'm sure they figured something out that they might have a plan. But, yeah, that one has to sit with you, and it sits in your gut for a couple of days. And next up for the Vancouver Canucks, a double dip with the Edmonton Oilers at Rogers Place on Saturday, Rogers Arena on Sunday. It's the home-and-home, back-to-back Oilers-Canucks. Feels like an important one this weekend. Feels like that mini playoff set. Two teams that are hoping they find themselves in the season a little bit later on this year. Updating you what's happened in the National Football League. First game of the day. There's three on tap on Thanksgiving south of the border. And happy Thanksgiving to people who might be listening in the States. Lions up 14-7 right now on the Chicago Bears. Bears with the football early in the second quarter. And they are on the move. We'll keep you updated as to what is going on there. Fantasy implications, I'm sure, for plenty of you out there. Plenty of you out there worried about your fantasy football teams. Now, I mentioned Brendan Morrison to join us in a second. And yes, we're going to get his take on what's happening in Calgary. He is a former Vancouver Canuck. He's a former Flamey. Currently resides in Calgary. And there are a lot of angles that we can approach this from. Not only has he been a player in the National Hockey League and been on a team where there was a big story that didn't allow you to always focus on hockey because people were always asking about it. But he's also got a son. He's got a son that's playing hockey right now, and he's playing in the Alberta League. And this is a conversation that goes to all levels of hockey about coaching and what crosses the line and what doesn't and what's tough love that can make you better because you have to learn tough lessons and how is the proper way to deal with coaches and players. It's a bigger conversation. I think you'll have a very interesting perspective. I got this text again today, and though I feel like I've explained this a couple of times, I will explain it again because some people don't seem to quite get the message or don't seem to have a great understanding of this. Text has come unsigned. He, as a MLU, should have reported it when it happened. Now that his hockey career is over and he has nothing to lose, he reports it to ruin a coach's career. He didn't report it to ruin a coach's career. If that's your cynical view of it, if that's just the revenge lens you want to look through, okay, that's your opinion. He didn't report it at the time because he didn't feel he was empowered enough to do so. And he felt as though his hockey career would have ended right then. So that's why he didn't do it. And in fact, nobody there reported it. It wasn't just him. Nobody there reported it. A couple of guys have corroborated the story. Is it just to ruin Bill Peters' career? I don't believe that is the motivation. I can't speak specifically to what is behind Akeem Alou bringing this out, but it's important that these things are brought up and are talked about. And as difficult as this is, Bill Peters, and I imagine his family, these situations need to arise to take us to a better place, unfortunately. when there have been obvious missteps, unreported, and then come to light later, and we can have a conversation about them, and we can educate people on proper behavior and proper dealings with fellow human beings, that's the good news. Yeah, that's right about the fact that he didn't do it until after his career because he thought his career would be over. Look what he is going through right now. He's showing up to meet with the NHL, and there's cameras, and there's people asking for statements every single day. And it's more than being a hockey player. So, yes, it makes sense to me why he didn't report it at the time. Complete sense. This is a player who has already been labeled by some as disruptive or a problem because he was involved in a hazing incident in junior when he stood up at the time. And unlike what happened with the Rockford IceHogs, at the time it happened, Akeem Alou stood up and said, no, this isn't okay. It's not okay to haze us like this, demean us as human beings. So he stood up and he took heat for it and he did the right thing, but it still got him labeled. So he had that already on his resume. Whether it was fair or not, some people labeled him as that. A disturbance. A disruption. So now a second incident happens. What do you think goes through his mind when he is not in a position of power and someone in a position of power does something wrong and he's been through that already? He said in his own interview with Frank Saravelli, I knew that the day I played the race card that it was over for me. So it was important enough to me to try to chase my hockey dream that I didn't say anything at the time. And quite frankly, I've wrestled with it every day since. This isn't just about spite. This isn't just about vengeance. I can't speak for Akeem Alou, but I want to believe that it's about something bigger. And that's what I will believe until I hear differently. You're entitled to your opinion. I appreciate the fact that we have different opinions and we can have these conversations on this show. And I'm hoping to have one with Brendan Morrison here in just a minute. We're just having a little trouble connecting with him. Generally joins us every single Thursday at this time, but we will track him down and we'll get him on the program here. And I'm not sure exactly what Brendan has seen during the course of his career. Hey, there's plenty of hockey players who've been asked about this over the last few days. And they said, whether it's pertaining to what happened in Carolina or anything like what we're hearing in this incident with Rockford IceHogs and Bill Peters, they said, I've never seen anything like it. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. It just hasn't been my experience. Mike Commodore does the morning show in Calgary. He's one of the hosts they rotate through with Boomer and the guys in the morning. And he said he'd never seen anything from a racial standpoint ever like this in his career. He's seen some stuff. He's been a very outspoken critic of a guy like Mike Babcock, but he hadn't seen anything like this. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Doesn't mean it shouldn't be talked about. And that's where we're at in the discussion right now. And if you're in my business right now, you're refreshing your feed every couple of minutes on Twitter to find out, are the Flames talking today? Is there another twist in this story? Where are we at right now? That's what Jamie and I are doing on a daily and nightly basis right now, trying to figure that out. That's where we're at. Where are you at with the story right now? You've got the text message inbox. You've got the fan feedback line. Where are you at with the story right now? It is exhausting to a certain degree, but that doesn't mean the process isn't worth it. But yeah, it's a lengthy one to go through. We'll continue to try to track down Brendan Morris and have a little trouble connecting with him right now, but should take you through a couple of happenings on ice last night. As mentioned, the specter of all of this going on with Bill Peters, the Calgary Flames found themselves in the midst of a lengthy losing streak, but they got through this road trip pretty decent. I'm not saying they played great hockey the entire time, but they came out of their four-game set 2-1-1. Which defies some logic given how they've played at times during the four-game trip and given all of this going on and their coach not being with the team and having questions being asked of them that have nothing to do with hockey and I'm sure family and friends contacting them day in, day out. Well, they got through it pretty decently. 2-1-1. Haven't been able to make up a whole lot of ground, but they have been able to get themselves back to .500 as they get set for a weekend affair with the Ottawa Senators. Tkachuk brothers battling on Saturday afternoon in Calgary. I mentioned the Leafs just look like a different team right now. Not that Detroit is any measure of great competition, but they're 6-0 winners last night. They're 3-0 under Sheldon Keefe. Tyson Barrie. Pretty easy to make the connection between Tyson Barrie's improved play and the coaching change. He has goals in 3 straight games. Had not scored for the Leafs before that. Won his first 23 games in Toronto without a goal, and now has goals in 3 straight. And I believe he is the first player in Maple Leafs history, first defenseman in the 102-year history of the Toronto Maple Leafs to score 3 consecutive games on the road. Pretty nice distinction. Sorry, Jamie, did you say we have Brendan on the line now? All right, we've got Brendan Morrison. He joins us now. Better late than never. Mo, how you doing?
Scotty, man, I was there waiting for the call, and for some reason I moved like 10 feet. My phone buzzed. I had 4 missed calls, so he's dead cell area. Sorry, man. Yeah, good to
That's
go.
All good. That's okay. We're going to get you on a Rogers phone, and we'll get this all taken care of as I plug the employer here during the conversation. Hey, as you know, Mo, and I'm sure you've had these conversations over the last number of days, people in the hockey world are having a lot of difficult conversations. As a former player, what's been your reaction to what has transpired over the course of this week?
You know, that's a deep question. But it's I think it's almost like the tip of the iceberg, really. You know, you kind of sit back and you kind of think, why did it take so long for this to come out? And why was everything kind of internalized within the game here for so long? And the answer, the only thing I can really come up to is that's kind of the culture. That's kind of what you were taught when you came in and, you know, just kind of go about your business, put your head down, work hard, and, you know, don't really try to cause any disruption at all. But obviously we're in a changing time. I'm sure as our parents and our grandparents would tell us, since they grew up as kids, everything continues to evolve. And even today, my kids tell me I'm outdated and I'm an old man because I don't understand all these apps on cell phones, etc. But, I mean, obviously, we're in a much more, I don't know if sensitive is the right word, that might be too strong, but we're in a different place here. And, you know, what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, whether the timing of it is now or before. I mean, there's certain things that you can and can't do.
And I want to get to your kids in that discussion in just 1 second, but as a former player, as you've thought back over the years during the course of this week, as people start to think about their own history, is there anything that you ever went through or your teams ever went through that now you sit here in 2019, Mo, and say, man, that wasn't okay? Or
no.
Did you have just positive experiences the entire time?
You know, for the most part, positive experiences. I mean, yeah, were guys challenged? Absolutely, guys were challenged. But, I mean, I don't think it ever crossed the line in my experience. You know, sometimes certain guys are motivated different ways, right? Certain guys need pats on the back. Certain guys need to be challenged at times in order to get the best out of them. Now, there's right and wrong ways to challenge guys, right? You can't cross the line and things like that. But, I mean, I don't have an issue with coaches challenging guys if it's done properly or calling guys out if it's done properly, not to demoralize or embarrass a player. But, you know, if they find their, you know, kind of the rich buttons to push with a kid and they find that's how he performs at his best, that will not only help himself but help the team, then I'm fine with it. But, you know, for me personally, no. I mean, have I been challenged? Absolutely. But, you know, nothing that I feel has ever crossed the line.
Brendan Morrison in conversation with me here on the Scott Rintoul Show. And everything you're describing about challenging a player in a positive manner goes back to trust. So as a player and now as an adult who is coaching, how do you build that trust in the coach-player relationship?
Well, I think the biggest thing is communication. And it's such a simple thing, and it's like in any aspect of life, whether you're dealing with, you know, your workplace or your employer or your boss or even, you know, your wife or your kids. I mean, communication. I mean, don't assume certain things and just be transparent. I mean, that's always my big thing. Communicate and be transparent. You know, guys want to know exactly where they stand. Guys don't like, or anybody for that matter, doesn't like a gray area, okay? And sometimes black and white might not be what you want to hear, but I think at the end of the day, you will appreciate it because you know what's expected of you and you're not sitting there guessing, well, what exactly am I supposed to do here?
Now, as we alluded to earlier in this conversation, you've got kids, you've got a son playing a pretty high level of hockey right now. I'm sure you've had these conversations before. I'm not sure if you've had them this week, but as both a parent and a former player, Mo, what do you consider conduct that crosses the line?
Well, I think anything physical, right? I mean, that's unacceptable. You don't need to physically grab a hold of a kid or an adult, for that matter, and shake them or kick them to get your point across. I think there's other effective ways. And obviously, racial terms, anything derogatory is unacceptable. And I know in this case here, well, I don't know, but from what I've heard in this case here, it doesn't sound like Peters was specifically attacking one individual, but, you know, obviously, you know, Akeem Alou being in the room when those terms were made, you know, okay, I mean, who was it directed at? Or I don't know. I mean, that's not for me to say, right? I don't know. And I think the statement by Bill Peters last night was a good statement. I mean, yes, he had to issue a statement. Or he didn't have to, but any person in their right mind would issue a statement like that. I don't know him personally, but, I think there's very few people in the world that have that inside them to be hurtful and want to hurt somebody. So I would like to think that it was, you know, just an error in judgment, a one-time error in judgment. And, he's learned from it, obviously.
Well, and we'll find out because Akeem Alou has a different account of this, and there are players that have corroborated the first part of his story. And now those same players, I'm sure Mo will be asked about this and the allegation, or pardon me, the claim by Bill Peters in that letter that he issued an apology. Those guys are going to be asked about that. Did he come into the room? Did he issue an apology? Because Alou has said in his first interview with Frank Saravelli, you know what, I think if we had gone down the road of an apology, I think I could have moved on, but that never happened. And so that's part of the investigation going on. I also want to ask you what it's like, and I know you didn't go through a situation exactly like this, but when you were in Vancouver, we all know the very large situation which ended up in courts with Todd Bertuzzi, but you had to continue playing on the team. Just like with this Bill Peters specter going on, these Flames players have to continue to play the game. What is it like to try and perform as a player when the media keeps asking about a situation that you're not very comfortable with and you don't really want to talk about?
Well, again, playing in the Canadian market, it's something that you can't escape. I mean, it's something that is at the forefront the time you walk into the arena and the time you leave the arena. It's kind of two ways to go about it. You can kind of shy away from it. And guys don't want to face it. I mean, you have to. I mean, there's no other way. You can't hide. You can't run from it. And I think what we tried to do in Vancouver, although it was, you know, it was a huge distraction. I mean, there's no question about it. We had police down at the rink. We had, you know, all this investigation going on. And guys wanted comments and players all the time. But at the same time, I mean, we knew the intent from Todd was not to have that outcome with Steve Moore. We knew that. Now, was Todd sticking up for a teammate and a good friend? Absolutely he was, but there was no way the intent was for him to injure a player like that. So, as you know, us internally, you try to galvanize as a team, right? You try to come together and you just try to do the best you can to get through it as a group and just lean on each other for support.
Normally the pressure of trying to perform in a game is the biggest pressure of the day, but during that situation, did it almost feel like a relief?
Well, a relief in the sense that like a decision was made quickly and there was some finality.
No, I mean that you're getting. I'm talking about just playing. I'm talking about going. Like, normally, pressure's on the ice. Hey, we got to win this game. We need this next goal. Boy, what does this result mean in the standings? But given what was going on off the ice, did it just feel like relief?
Absolutely. Like, you know, for players. And you know, I even tell this to the kids I coach today, like when you come into the room, that's kind of like your sanctuary. That's the time where, you know, you get to kind of not escape. Well, I guess they escape things from the outside world. And a lot of times it's interesting. You see at least with young kids, you see a really different personality come out in that room when they're just around their buddies and their friends and people that maybe are a little bit introverts or all of a sudden they have this outgoing personality. And it's really cool to see. But, you know, for us as professionals, that was our sanctuary and that was our safe haven. And when you get on the ice, you have a job to do and you're so focused on doing that job that everything just kind of escapes you for a period of time.
Mo, great stuff, buddy. Love getting you on to talk about hockey, and I know this is a situation that is hockey-related but not really hockey, but that's why I love having you on, pal. Thank you very much for doing this again, and we'll talk next Thursday.
Hey, man, anytime at all. Appreciate it.
That is Brendan Morrison weighing in, and I thought he had a couple of pertinent things to say there about this conversation, and specifically when I asked him, as a parent, as a former player, what type of conduct crosses the line? Well, anything physical was the first thing he brought up, and I think he went to the racial slurs after that because I think obviously there's no one who condones that. But I think the gray area has been, over the years, physical conduct. The way you talk to players. Are you derogatory? Are you demeaning? Is that just tough love? What file does that go under? And as Mo said, and I completely agree with him, you don't touch them. You don't touch players as a coach. It's not what you do. Those days, that used to happen, those are gone. It's not acceptable. So we're there now, and I hope most people are in agreement with that, and I hope that behavior is eradicated immediately if it hadn't been eradicated for the most part already. Now the conversation and the way you talk to players, that is the next hurdle we're going to go through. And this is going to be a learning experience for coaches as well. How do you motivate each player has been a long-standing question that coaches have faced for a long time. And yes, there are some guys that need you to challenge them, as Brendan termed it in that conversation, because that's how they best respond. There are other players that they don't respond particularly well to that, and that's always been the challenge of coaching, as I use that word again. But now, when you're challenging them, how do you do that in a proper manner? That's where this conversation goes next. It's one that's going to continue. Perhaps it continues tomorrow. We'll see if we hear anything from the Flames later today. In Calgary, we're going to send you to Hockey Central. Here in Vancouver, we'll continue to talk about this, but we'll dig into what happened to the Vancouver Canucks and the way that lead just fell apart last night in Pittsburgh. Patrick Johnson joins me next right here on the Scott Rintoul Show.
This is the Scott Rintoul Show.
Besser shoots and scores right off the draw. First career NHL goal, Quinn Hughes.
On the official home of the Canucks.
And it's Markstrom again, this time with the glove.
Elias Pettersson, and shoots, scores!
Sportsnet 650.
Into the right circle, Latang with a one-timer, he scores! Fourth consecutive goal for the Pittsburgh Penguins as Chris Letang beats Demko for the top of the right circle. And Pittsburgh leads 7-6 with 3:06 left in the third.
Period like that. Period like that for a team like that last night in Pittsburgh. Ooh, that was ugly last night. It did not end well. Canucks give up 6 in the third period. At the hands of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and after holding a 6-3 lead in that final frame, they leave Pennsylvania with 0 points. Had the good start against Philadelphia on Monday. That's the first period you want. That's your template right there. Scored the opening goal. Better team for 20 minutes. In Pittsburgh, it was the middle frame. That's the second period you want. So if we're cutting and pasting periods together, take the first period from Philly, take the second period from Pittsburgh, and now you're just looking for a strong third period. Maybe it's the one against the Detroit Red Wings. You're not going to get to play a team that looks like that very often, but when you come back and you score 5 in the third, maybe that's your ideal third period if you're the Vancouver Canucks. Unfortunately, copy and paste not working real well as far as achieving results. So 0-4 in Pennsylvania. Canucks head to Edmonton today on the heels of that 8-6 loss, demoralizing to a certain extent, no question about it. There are things to get into. Patrick Johnson of the Province and the Vancouver Sun is going to join me here momentarily. I don't think we can label this a turning point for the Canucks, but this is one of those games, like the game they lost to the Washington Capitals, which was different. That was a different type of third period. I do think we have to separate the third period last night in Pittsburgh from the one we saw at Rogers Arena when they lost the 5-1 lead to the Washington Capitals, because that was more about goaltending. That was less about how they played. Last night was about how they played in the back half, back three quarters of that third period. And they looked like a team that didn't quite know what to do, wasn't quite sure how to stem the tide. And Travis Green talked about it after the game. We'll hear him here in just 1 second, but he used a word that you don't want to hear very often. He used a word that as a hockey player, as an athlete, when you get to critical situations, you do not want this word setting in. Have a listen to Travis Green after his team blows the 6-3 third period lead. Oh, we don't have that clip? I apologize. We don't have that right now. We'll get it a little bit later. But the word he used was panic. A little bit of panic. They didn't quite know what to do. And he talked about the young guys, and I know some people were critical of Travis Green's statement. They were critical of the head coach in general. They'll say that lands on the head coach. And that's a conversation we'll get into with Patrick Johnson here in a second. How do you apportion the blame when you see a game like last night? Some people will lay it all at the coach. Some people will talk about the goaltender. Other people will say, no, that's on the players. You got to be better. I think there's some to go around in all of those, quite frankly. I have always been a guy that says, yeah, generally in hockey or a free-flow sport like that, mostly it's at the hand of the players, unless there is something glaring. Yeah, Travis Green could have done things better. And I do think it's an incorrect assumption, but I think there's an assumption out there that when the Canucks sit back, and JT Miller said, yeah, we sat back too much in the third period, I think there's an incorrect assumption that that's what the players are being told to do. I don't think it's the case. I think it's natural tendency. I think you see it sometimes, especially when a team is trying to grind out a win, or when a team just relaxes a little bit. We talked about the casual approach for much of the game against the Philadelphia Flyers. Is it getting too casual? Is it just getting too unaggressive? Label it what you will, but right now the Vancouver Canucks have not been able to strike that balance. And they haven't been able to strike it often enough. There is a balance right now in the NHL, because they're not the only team that this happens to. It feels like it when your team commits the errors and has puck after puck fly by it when you're leading by 3 goals, and how could this happen? This doesn't happen. But this happens. This happened to the Montreal Canadiens the other night. It wasn't all in the third period. They were 4-0 at home with Carey Price in net. So this happens other places, but when it happens to your team, it feels like you're the only one, or how could this happen? This wouldn't happen to any other. It does happen right now in the NHL, and it's a difficult balance to strike. How do you continue to be aggressive while at the same time being responsible defensively? And right now the Vancouver Canucks have not been able to achieve that balance often enough when they've had third period leads. Certainly one like that. Scott Rintoul with you here, live on location, by the way, at Andrew Sherritt today in East Vancouver. Come on down. We're on East 1st, 3625. There's a free lunch going on, so you can fill your belly a little bit, and it's the Cut the Cord event brought to you by Milwaukee. More on that as the show continues, but Patrick Johnson of the Province and the Vancouver Sun joins me right now. Patrick, thank you for doing this. How are you?
I'm good, Scotty. I wish I'd known you guys were out there. I could have come stop by. I said hello. Seen you in the flesh. Maybe brought you a warm drink to warm yourself up.
I should have let you know. This is on me. I should have let you know. That would have been great. But we're inside. We don't need warm enough. In fact,
okay, good.
I'm actually quite warm. I'm in the sunbeam.
Okay, good.
There's great big windows here at Andrew Sherritt, and the sun's coming through on my back. Me fighting through the natural tendency to want to nap right now. Curl up like a cat or a dog and just nap. But I'm fighting through it. Canucks couldn't fight through it last night in Pittsburgh.
No.
I mentioned this coming in. Some people will coach. Some people blame the players. Some people blame the goalie. Where do we apportion the blame after a loss like that?
I mean, it's a reminder of, you know, what the great teams are about, and the Penguins, you know, maybe getting up on a bit in age with their stars, but they still have two superstars. You can't take your foot off the gas. The Canucks have had so much success, especially, you know, the first month of the season, you know, playing aggressive. As you said, they were aggressive in their systems. They were forcing turnovers. They were putting the puck back in the opponent's end of the ice. And, you know, as we expected, this month was going to get tougher because the teams were better that they played off the top of the season. And, you know, it is a statement at the end of the day that, you know, the system, I think, is good. I think the system's designed well. It's one that if you execute it well, and you know, that's in many ways down to the players, but that's down to the, you know, the quality of players that are there. So it is a bit of a, I think, a catch-all, you know, setup here in terms of if you're trying to assign blame that, you know, at the end of the day, the players have to play better. Maybe this is the limit that they're at, and, you know, in the end, maybe you just need to find better players. But I think in the end of the day, this is the kind of game you get in the NHL today too now. Like, you know, save percentages are down. Guys are scoring more. And against a team like Pittsburgh, you know, you should be winning games when you score 6 goals.
No question about it. And the warning signs were there earlier on this road trip. Go right back to Nashville. They got out of that game 5-3, but that third period was a little bit of hell on wheels.
Right.
They're lucky to get out of there when they surrendered that many shots and that many scoring opportunities. They were lucky in many ways to get out of there 5-3, but they obviously didn't quite learn their lesson. And it is a reminder, isn't it, Patrick, that as much as this team is better and the skill is better mm-hmm. and the quality and depth is better,
mm-hmm.
there is still learning to be done, and this is one of those tough lessons you learn on your way to being better.
Well, it's also the fine edge there is in terms of successful and the fine edge you have in terms of your depth. And you look at a guy like Jay Beagle, who basically, you know, I mean, he did play a couple of games, I guess, last week, but really, you know, I don't think was anything close to 100%. And, you know, Jay Beagle's been a very interesting story. We obviously, you know, when he was signed, I was one of them who wasn't a huge fan of the term on his deal. But, you know, as he's been deployed in terms of the player that the Canucks signed him to be, the role they asked him to play, he's been very good. And he's been, you know, he's been facing basically the toughest matchups of any Canucks center so far this season. And one of the remarkable things, and I've got a story going up later today at provincesports.com about that, is one of the remarkable things is, you know, we talk about shot attempts and the fact that you in general want to be on the ice for more, you know, for more than for more in, you know, going towards the opposition net than going towards your own. And Beagle is a guy that is not known for offense. He's known as being a bit of a prevent kind of guy, and the reality is more shots go against the Canucks' net than go the other way. But if we're able to measure those shots in terms of their quality, you know, he's a 50-50 player. He's really good at directing play to the outside. And you know, that's an element the Canucks have been missing. And we can see it plainly in a game like last night where they had a lot of struggles trying to slow down that Penguins offense, especially late in the game. And you sit there and you think, man, would it have been different if Beagle was in there? That, you know, it's not so much that Bo Horvat isn't that player, but it makes Bo Horvat play less offense, if that makes sense. You know, it gives him a role that, you know, is tougher on him, and there's knock-on effects through the rest of the lineup. And, you know, I mean, credit to guys like Zach McEwen and Tyler Graovac, because, you know, both of them are guys that want to play. They're working hard. They've clearly got the coach's eye, but at the end of the day, they started the season in the American Hockey League, and there's a reason for that. And right now, the Canucks, you know, really need to sort of pull up their socks in general and figure out how they're going to do their best to replace a guy like Jay Beagle until he returns.
In conversation with Patrick Johnson following an 8-6 loss for the Canucks last night in Pittsburgh, this is the Scott Rintoul Show. Nikolai Goldobin also began the season in the American Hockey League, and he began last night with Elias Pettersson. That didn't last particularly long. Is there anything we can take away, anything tangible we can take away from Nikolai Goldobin last night?
You know, unfortunately not. I mean, it's at the end of the day, you know, I've always been a fan of him as a person. He's a real character in the room, really upbeat guy, loves playing hockey. But, you know, we saw it enough last year that, you know, he started the year with Pettersson, you know, had a great sort of off-ice chemistry with Pettersson. But on the ice, at the end of the day, you know, the hands weren't there enough. He's a great passer. Like, I think he doesn't get enough credit for his ability to create and ability to move the puck. But he also needed to be able to finish. And there was probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 goals that he left on the ice last year that he should have scored, which would have made sort of everything else, because he's not, let's be honest, he's not a great off puck player. Like, you know, defensively, that was an issue. And these are the things that make a difference. It's the small things. They start adding up. And you know, it's tough to see because, as I said, you know, you always enjoy seeing players like this around and you want players to succeed, but it was a tough night last night. And I think in the end, it was a reminder of just how he's not a fit for this team, not where they're trying to go. You know, if this team is truly trying to build itself into a contender a year or two from now, you know, he's not a player that's on that squad that you're hoping to find a guy that just does things better all around. It's such a stark contrast. You look at someone like JT Miller, who obviously has played with Pettersson a lot and just does so many things really well, on top of the fact that he's got a great set of hands. He can put the puck in the net and he can turn pucks over. I mean, you know, goalie's not shy about going after pucks and getting in the corner, but there's guys that are better than him. And at the end of the day, there was a reason why he didn't play a whole ton last night. And I'm really curious to see how much longer he sticks around here.
You mentioned JT Miller. We can talk about the price of acquisition and what he's mm-hmm. done for this team. I think everybody would agree mm-hmm. that he's been great over the first couple of months. You could argue he's been the Canucks' best, most consistent player during that time frame. The other thing he's become for me, and I want to get your reaction, because you're in the room more often than I am, he's become the barometer of this team, the emotional barometer for the Vancouver Canucks. Would you agree with that statement?
I think he's, you know, there's a few guys, you know, I like to jokingly call them the truth tellers, but he's definitely emerged as one of those guys that, you know, he'll tell you what he thinks. He'll tell you how he feels. He's not shy. There is a leadership element to him. And you know, it's a bit like something that, you talk to people what it means to be a captain, for instance, and Bo Horvat is such a good example of this, that, you know, there was a time maybe where your captain could have been a guy who was a depth player, a third or fourth line forward, a third pairing defenseman. But your leaders now more than ever really have to be the guys who can get the job done. And if you're going to be able to speak up and sort of set the tone, you know, it's nice. I mean, again, to go back to Beagle, it's nice to have a guy like Beagle who's got a good attitude, who understands his role. I mean, that's leadership of its own kind. But what you really need is the guy that really says, guys, this isn't acceptable. We need to do better. We're going to go out and do it, and I'm going to go out and do it myself. And, you know, you look at a guy like Bo Horvat, he's such a good example of that as well. There's a reason why he's the captain, you know, on top of everything else that you require in a captain these days in terms of leadership, in sort of public spokesman, all that kind of thing. But the ability to go out and get it done is such a statement about JT Miller. And, you know, it's funny, we look at the sort of comment that Alain Vigneault made the other day about, you know, I guess he told the reporters there, they said, they were on the road, they said, you know, go find JT and tell him, you know, AV says you get it now. And, you know, that I think from what I understand from the guys that were there, they've related to me, you know, that actually meant something to him, because he's like, you're right, you know, I was just a dumb kid. I didn't get it when I was in New York. You know, sometimes that's just about growing up and learning. But, you know, Miller is a guy who gets it done. And for, you know, those, you know, younger players, especially the ones that are trying to break into the league, the likes of a Zach MacEwen or perhaps if we see Cole Lind this season, you know, a guy like that who can say, listen, you know, he's a guy that's got lots of skills. He's a useful player, but more than anything, he's a guy that just put his head down and got it done. And now he can, you know, can sort of wave his flag and show, you know, his teammates, all about that.
Tyler Myers has brought leadership, if you ask people in that room mm-hmm. as well. Positive reviews in the first month, not so much in the second month. Is Tyler Myers always, always, always going to be a flashpoint between the eye test community and the analytics community?
I'm not even sure if he's a flashpoint, to be honest, because, I mean, you know, the analytics community is like, listen, there's no denying that there's useful things to Tyler Myers. You know, you look at some of his ability, I mean, it matches with the eye test. We know he's a good passer. We know he moves the puck well. We know that he's been a positive offensive influence in his career. But we also know that, you know, he's not a shutdown defenseman type. He's been a guy that, you know, he's not a key piece. He's a complementary piece. And, you know, the first part of the season, he, like the rest of his team, was doing, as I said, doing really well at essentially turning pucks over in the neutral zone, forcing the play in the other direction. You know, it was notable time and again, and I made note of it in my, you know, a lot of my game stories about how he was making breakout passes that we just didn't see last year. You know, there's a skill set to him that, you know, it's a reminder of how much they struggled in that regard last year. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, he and Alex Adler have been asked to play a lot. I think more than, you know, is reasonable almost for any defenseman, but more than, you know, I think these two guys are really built for. And you know, the more you play, the more tired you get. And especially in a stretch like November where it's, what, 15, 16 games in 30 days, there's not a lot of time to rest. There's not a lot of time to recover. And you know, the more tired you get, the more prone you are to making mistakes, the more prone you are to, you know, being unable to react quickly enough to, you know, situations around you. And I think we've seen a fair bit of that, especially in the last couple of weeks. You know, it was a tough road trip. We always said it was going to be, and you know, I think everywhere we look, we're sort of seeing tangible examples of that challenge.
Well, everything you just outlined and that answer was great, because it's reasonable, it's rational, and that's the conversation. I think that's where a lot of us exist, Patrick. I think where the two communities battle is when you see something that says, well, Tyler Myers is a below replacement level defenseman, which isn't accurate. There might be numbers that suggest that, but that's not in fact the case. And I think that's where the divide still exists between these two communities.
Well, it's a bit of a question of deployment. You know, I mean, it's a bit like Brandon Sutter, and we've written about this earlier this year. When, you know, Sutter has essentially been playing, you know, before he got hurt, was playing the best hockey of his time in Vancouver, and possibly some of the best hockey of his career. And I think, you know, he was in many ways, and it's something, you know, has been discussed before, perhaps saddled a little bit by his last name. That, you know, you think of how his dad and his uncles played, and there was always a feistiness to their game, a kind of battling to their game, and let's be honest, that's not what Brandon Sutter is. Brandon Sutter is a good skater, you know, a good face-off man, a guy that's got a good shot, and in the end, he's not this sort of two-way guy. And we go back to that statement that Jim Benning once made about him being a foundational player, and he hasn't proven to be. He's not this sort of Ryan Kessler 2.0 that I think people perceive that he might be. He's a player that he's a complementary piece. He does well, you know, in sort of a lesser defensive role, but one that can focus in on his skills. And I think that was an argument that people often made. It said, listen, the numbers say he's not the player that our brain wants him to be, but they do say he could be this other player, and he was doing well in that role. And that's what it comes down to, is it's not so much, you know, it's so often it gets portrayed as a, you know, all or nothing, whether it's an eye test on the eye test side, you know, well, look at all these things, you know, it's like, well, no, let's be honest. Don't ignore the things that you know that you can see that aren't going well. And it's the same thing with the numbers. The numbers, I mean, most players do not exist on the extremes. Most players are in the great middle, and most players need to be put in roles to succeed. And that's not a statement about numbers. That's just a statement about smart coaching, and the numbers help you understand what the player does well.
Patrick Johnson of the Province and the Sun joining me here on the Scott Rentoul Show, Sportsnet 650, your home of Vancouver Canucks hockey. It's been a very heavy week in hockey. You know this. I know you've been having these conversations, as I have as well. It's an important week, and these are important conversations. Where does your gut tell you we're headed in the next little while?
It's interesting. You know, the thing that stands out to me, and I've said this to a few people, is just sort of thinking about my own experience as a teacher and a coach, you know, which I was before I moved into journalism, and you know, seeing the sort of cultural shifts that were going on with, everywhere, you know, and you would see it most, say, in high school students in terms of the sort of wiring that had been laid down based on how, for instance, education has shifted, and you know, positive things that we talked about, student-centered learning, and thinking about how, you know, kids learn, how teachers interact, how adults interact with them, and a much more positive vibe, a much more engaging vibe, you know, ideas of critical thinking and learning to sort of learning to learn, as we say, and that, you know, the sort of old school top down, you know, scream at you mentality that you know used to exist in sports, and this sort of idea in education that, you know, we learn stuff just for, like, basically to repeat it, that, you know, that education is a series of facts and you just kind of store them in your head, but you don't have any deeper understanding of them. You learn any of that kind of stuff. You know, there was a real shift going on in terms of how, you know, young people go into situations, what they in, you know, almost instinctually understood their situation to be. And often they weren't necessarily self-aware of that, but that's how they were wired. And, you know, I think we're seeing a lot of pushback, you know, from not just Akeem Aliyu, but, we're, you know, you hear people around the edges, you know, and I'm, you know, you hear, you're starting to hear sort of whispers is the wrong word, but there, I think there are people, you know, say, you know, who minor leaguers who have stories of their own, who are trying to find the confidence to speak about these things years later, because at the end of the day, they knew something was off in how they were interacting with coaches and other leaders, but they didn't know how to articulate that, partly because of the fact that, you know, they've been kind of wired to recognize what was right and what was wrong, but they also were dealing with a system that, you know, once they shifted into hockey or into sports full time, that hadn't adapted. You know, the leadership was coming from a different era and a different sort of base assumption or base understanding, and that we're now finally sort of seeing that all kind of coming crashing together. And I think it's a good thing because it's forcing conversations about, you know, what teams are supposed to be, what coaches are supposed to be. You know, at lower levels, coaches are trained differently now. And, you know, you do see examples of coaches coming to the NHL who have, you know, more sort of rounded approaches and how they deal with things. I think Travis Green's a great example of that, actually. You know, he says a lot of things that to me tell me he's paid attention to, you know, what the mindset of younger athletes is now. You know, you think about a kid born in the late 80s versus a kid born in, say, the early 2000s and what they've run into. You know, I think more and more we're going to see the discussion. I don't think the discussion's stopping anytime soon. I do think, you know, we do need to see, especially on our side, because I know it's not necessarily what sports reporters are wired to think about, but I do think there is a broader discussion, and there's people with expertise in this kind of stuff that will help us understand what the discussion is. And I do think we need to see more of that versus just sort of, you know, I think what at times feels a bit like gotcha investigation, you know, trying to catch people having said bad things, and, you know, maybe spending more time understanding, you know, what the underpinnings of this sort of shift in culture is all about.
And how people can get better, and how people can improve,
exactly.
And how to make reparations when you have made mistakes. You said it at the outset of your answer there, Patrick, and I know we're short on time, but I think the healthiest thing that I hope comes out of this is what you said. Hey, you reflected. You started to look back at your own interaction as a teacher, as a coach. I went through the same thing. And that doesn't mean that I've done anything like what these people are alleged to have done, but it makes you ask the question, how can I be better? And that's what we should constantly be doing.
And I think, you know, I just quickly, I had a conversation with a friend who works in HR last night. And one of the things he pointed out was, you know, just how much, you know, workplace safety legislation now incorporates ideas of bullying and harassment, which just wasn't a thing 20 years ago. And you think about, you know, stories that we've heard of coaches or coaches we've dealt with, you know, in the ways that they spoke. And you know, we thought was, well, you know, that's a bit weird, but it was easy to sort of put up with it. Whereas now, you know, I think we have a sort of a better understanding of no, that's not the way to approach it at all. And here's the problem with it. And that there really are better ways. And it takes work and it's hard. It's not easy. And I understand why there's a lot of people that, you know, sort of almost instinctually push back, because, you know, having to do that kind of self-reflection is difficult. And a lot of us aren't wired for it. And, you know, it is makes you uncomfortable, and nobody wants to feel uncomfortable. But I think the point is, as you said, that we can get better and that there is a better place to get to, and that it might be complicated along the way, but you know, that there is a purpose to this, and that in the end it makes everything better. It makes our sport better, it makes our society better, you know, and it makes for a more interesting world, I'd say.
Well said, and generally well written as well, my friend. I look forward to your next post later today. Thank you very much for sharing your time with us this morning.
Thanks, Scotty. Take care.
That is Patrick Johnson of The Province and the Vancouver Sun. He'll have an article coming out later today. And if you have any comments on our discussion about the Canucks or what we were talking about in terms of the broader conversation about communication and coaching and teachable moments and where we're headed with the conversation that both the Mike Babcock dismissal and the impending Bill Peters dismissal, and yes, I feel confident enough to call it that, hit me up. You've got the Subway text message inbox, 650-650. Speaking of lunch, you can come get some free lunch and check out some fantastic products as well. I am live on location at Andrew Sherrod Limited. That's East First Avenue, basically just off the highway on East First. Great showroom down here. If you're a contractor, you need to be here because Milwaukee has their Cut the Cord event deals that you have never seen and won't see after today. It's a deal day event. You got to be here to get the deal. These deals will be gone tomorrow. Come down, get some food as well. If you're somebody who's doing some renos, swing by. We're on location here until 1 o'clock. Coming up next, there is a name that keeps getting put forth, and it has to do with the Vancouver Canucks. Brian Burke commented on it earlier today, and you'll hear him next right here on the Scott Rintoul Show.
Now more of the Scott Rintoul Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Malkin with a chance to shoot for the empty net. There's a penalty. He scores with 0.2 seconds left. Evgeny Malkin scores his second of the night into the yawning cage, and the Penguins go ahead 8-6 and will win an absolute barn burner tonight at PPG Paints Arena. Sure you've had
enough. Hold on. Hold on. Didn't think we'd be playing this today, but I didn't think we'd see what we did last night in Pittsburgh. Scott Rintoul with you. Thanks for joining us here this morning. Jordan from Saskatoon, listening in the middle part of the country, says, hey, I know you're saying this happens to other teams, what happened to the Canucks last night, but this has happened to us twice already this season. It's just embarrassing. It shows some of the youth on this team. Definitely why we need our veterans. You can hit me up on the Subway text message inbox, 650-650. Scott Rintoul live on location. We are at Andrew Sherrod Limited today. They got this brand new showroom in East Vancouver. Come on down and check it out. It's on East First. It is just off the highway. So join us here on location, and if I need to entice you further, I probably don't if you're a contractor because you already know about Andrew Sherrod. If you're somebody who's doing home renos, if you're someone who needs a new power tool, get down here today. There's a free lunch going on, so you can get a little food in your belly. Milwaukee has the Cut the Cord event happening right now, and by coming down here today, you could win a Milwaukee shop valued at $5,000. There are deals going on today that you won't get any other day. Milwaukee has a great setup here at Andrew Sherrod. Come say hi to us. Come to the event. It's 3625 East First Avenue in Vancouver. As mentioned, it's on First Ave in Vancouver, just off the highway here. Come see us. Come say hi. Get a little bit of lunch and maybe win a $5,000 workshop in the process. Tough loss for the Vancouver Canucks last night. Tanbeer chiming in. It's the second time Pitt has done it in the third period. Yeah, they're a good team. That still shouldn't happen, but it's a good team. I do separate the Washington game from this game. To me, this is more reflective of the Rangers game that they held on in. It's more reflective of the Predators game. Again, they got a win in earlier this road trip, but the warning signs were there. Nashville just wasn't able to close on its opportunities, and Malkin just went lethal hitman professional last night. That's what he did. He just took his game to another level. Yeah, there was time and space, but not everybody can exploit it. Nashville wasn't able to the other night against Vancouver, got away with one, but the lesson wasn't learned. Maybe it will be now. It's a tough lesson to learn when you don't even get any points out of a game you led 6-3 in the third period. It's something Bick Nizar and I are going to be breaking down throughout the course of Canucks Central. We welcome your feedback as well. I do want to talk about what is going on in the National Hockey League right now. What's going on in hockey, the discussions we're having. If you're new to what has happened in the last 24 hours, I will give you a quick Coles Notes version. Bill Peters issued a statement that included a vague apology. It included an admittance to using what was termed offensive language. He claimed it was not directed at any one person. He didn't use Akeem Alou's name. That's by design. That is a legal decision by his team. That's not that surprising. Didn't touch on anything that had been alleged in Carolina, which was a completely different situation. And as Brian Burke said earlier today, that's not the Flames' problem. It's still a problem, but that's a Carolina problem. That's not a Calgary problem. But what is happening now is a Calgary Flames problem. Akeem Alou has responded with a statement of his own saying that he read the statement and he found it misleading. He found it disingenuous, I should say. And he found it, or sorry, he used the word insincere. I don't want to misquote his statement. found it misleading, insincere, and concerning. He's meeting with the NHL. He won't be commenting any further on this matter until he has had that meeting with the National Hockey League. So that's where we're at right now. We're waiting to see if the Flames do anything today. Brad Treliving didn't put a time frame on it last night. He had hoped there would be another step in this process and maybe the beginning of some closure. It's going to be a while before there's legal closure on this, but maybe the closure of, okay, we're moving on from this coach. He alluded to hopefully updating people today, but we're not there yet. And we'll wait and see if that comes down. But people are having this conversation around the NHL. We're having this conversation on this station. Someone asked Wayne Simmonds about it. Obviously, a player of African-Canadian descent who's playing in the National Hockey League. And he was asked about this situation involving Bill Peters. And he said this today. I can guarantee you every single black hockey player has been called a racial slur at some point in their career, whether it's been younger or older in their career. It's something that people don't like to talk about because it makes them uncomfortable. In light of this coming out, you know, hopefully this can do some good for the hockey community and shed some light on it. Can't disagree. Can't disagree at all. It does make people uncomfortable. There have been plenty of people who have wanted to turn a blind eye to it when it's happened or pretend that it doesn't happen. And this isn't about levels. It's not, well, this rarely happens in our sport, or I've never seen that, so I'm not sure. Listen, when people come forward with these claims, and we've had people texting this show about it saying, hey, I am a visible minority, and here's what happened to me in minor hockey. This isn't an attack on hockey. This isn't an attack on sport. What this is a conversation about how to make things better and to uncover some uncomfortable truths that have been there for years that a lot of people haven't wanted to pay attention to and nobody wanted to own up to and figured they'd just go away and it'll be fine. And in other cases, depending what part of the conversation we're talking about here, if we're talking about the physical abuse aspect of it, well, that's just how you toughen people up. And it was okay at the time, and it made me a better person. It doesn't have the same impact on everybody. So these are going to be uncomfortable conversations. They're going to be difficult to have, but I think there is something better at the end. I hope there's something better at the end. That's how I see it. We should all have reflection, and we should all question how we do things and how we treat people and can we be better. It doesn't mean you're an awful person. We all make mistakes. We all have missteps. Can you be better? Can this lead to people being better? This text comes in. Subway text message inbox 650-650. I was born in 1997, which makes this person 22 or turning 22 at some point this year. And even over the last 3 years, I've seen a massive shift in culture change. And I have a younger brother who is 16 and finds some things that I say, this is as a 22-year-old, finds some things I say very offensive. When I believe those things said within a certain group or in front of certain people, not a big deal. Students these days are being taught what's right and what's wrong and are given a talking to if something wrong is said or done. 20 years ago, you couldn't get hired at a job for having a tattoo. Now you can. All comes down to what's right, what's wrong, equal opportunities, how people are treated. And we're getting a lot of text messages like that. That it's okay to have this conversation. And it's okay to be uncomfortable with it and realize that maybe you don't do everything properly. We're good to have those. And there is behavior that's being exposed. And this Carolina situation isn't done yet either, because you have the former owner of the Hurricanes last night coming out and saying, I would have fired Bill Peters in a nanosecond had I known about these allegations of physical abuse, the allegations that he kicked a player on the bench, which Rod Brindamore has confirmed now, and the allegation that he punched a player in the helmet at one point. That was handled internally. Rod Brindamore believes that it was handled properly. We're waiting to hear from Ron Francis, who's now the general manager in Seattle. But Peter Karmanos Jr. said, hey, had I known about this, Bill Peters would have been gone in a nanosecond. So it never escalated past the management level. And the one thing I think is important to realize about that particular situation is until we find out more details, and we might never get them, we don't know what the ask was. We don't know what the ask was. When there is conflict, when there are people saying, you've done wrong by me, too often we make assumptions about what they want because we project or impose our own thoughts on those situations. Well, here's what I'd want there. but you don't necessarily know. In some cases, it might be an apology and a promise, an affirmation to get better. In other cases, it might be more. We just don't know. So you're going to want to hear from the leadership group of that team, and you're going to want to hear from Ron Francis, and people are going to want more details because maybe there was a solution presented at that meeting that was carried out and executed by not only Bill Peters but other members of the coaching staff and that hockey team where they went, I can live with this. You've admitted you've done wrong. We've moved on from here. You screwed up, but it's in the past. I don't know. Maybe there's other people that don't feel that way. We'll have to wait for that to come out. One of the names that's been brought up because Brent Sopel, in the last couple of years, talked about Mark Crawford hitting him on the bench. Former Vancouver Canuck, former Vancouver Canucks head coach. So people brought up the name Mark Crawford and where that is going. And there was, and it was vague to a certain degree, and I'll read it for you in a second, but yes, there was another accusation of sorts lobbed Crawford's way this morning by Patrick O'Sullivan, who played for him down in Los Angeles. But as for the one that Brent Sopel put out there publicly in the last couple of years, Brian Burke was obviously general manager of the team at the time and had this to say about it this morning on Vancouver Radio.
The one time he crossed the line, and Brent Sopel told the story on Spit and Chicklets a couple weeks ago, and I only heard part of the interview, but I remember the incident. Crow kicked Brent Sopel on the bench, and Brent Sopel was having an awful night, but he kicked him. And I went down to Crow's office afterwards, and Crow got up from his desk and came around the desk and met me at the door. So I knew right away he realized the gravity of it. So I said, I screwed up. He said, I kicked Soaps. And I said, I know, I saw it. And I said, Mark, you're going to apologize to Brent Sopel right now, one-on-one. You're going to apologize to him in front of the entire team. You can do it right now in the room if you want, or you can do it at practice tomorrow, which he did at practice. And this can never happen again. And it never happened again. And I talked to Soaps, and I said, Soaps, Crow's going to apologize to you personally, then again in front of the team. And that's the end of it. We move on. And that was the end of it.
And if Brent Sopel was okay with that, then that's the end of it. And we'd have to get Brent Sopel commenting now as to whether or not he felt that was the right direction, whether or not that made things okay by him. But that's Brian Burke commenting on that situation. Patrick O'Sullivan, as I mentioned, had Mark Crawford for his head coach down in Los Angeles and tweeted this today. And if you know anything about Patrick O'Sullivan's backstory, about him being abused growing up, physically and mentally, you understand that he had a really rough road to hoe on the way to the National Hockey League. And then this is about when he got there. Here's what Patrick O'Sullivan tweeted today. Abusive power has no place in hockey or in anything else. As someone who went through awful things with my first NHL coach who knew my abuse background as a child, I hope they all get what's coming to them, and I hope it happens fast. O'Sullivan did not expand on that any further other than to say, when someone tweeted back at him, you're the first person I thought of when I heard about Peters kicking a player on the bench, Patrick O'Sullivan said, I'll expand further on my own situation as I already have in my book, but right now there's a bigger problem that needs to be taken care of. I can wait. And as many people have suggested and in some cases hoped, there are more stories that are going to come to light. More is going to come out here in this conversation. And we'll see where it goes. We'll see exactly where it goes. But there are going to be more stories that have light shed on them, and people will react, and there will be questions that need to be answered. And it's going to be very uncomfortable for a lot of people. And it's not just going to be uncomfortable for those who are in the direct line of alleged abuse, whether that be physical, whether that be mental. And perhaps in cases it may be racial, like in the case of Hakeem Alyu. But there are going to be people who are around those situations who are called on to corroborate, called on to give their own detailed accounts of what happened at the time. And that's where this is headed. And that doesn't mean that every single coach at every single level is going to be called in the carpet. That's not the case. And I've made this point throughout the course of the week. There are going to be some bad things that come out of this in the very near future. And some bad stories exposed, some uncomfortable truths that are revealed. But this is headed to a better place, and it doesn't mean there haven't been a lot of good things done within this sport and other sports and coach-player interactions. There's been a lot of great things that have come out of it. And a lot of us, I would include myself in that, have had mainly positive experiences on our path growing up throughout athletics. Some negatives along the way, yep, no question. Things that you wish people would have done differently, absolutely. And it is good that we have a time of empowerment where people are willing to stand up, whereas at one time they weren't. Brendan Morrison said it last hour. He said he had positive experiences and that he was challenged at times, but he also admits that, yeah, when I grew up, it was different. It was, okay, this is what the coach tells you to do. You put your head down and you do it. And fortunately for him, the right people were in charge, and he didn't seem to indicate that there was anything he considered abusive along the way of his journey. That's where we're at right now. Someone texts in this, and it's a good text. Abuse never made anyone, quote-unquote, better. It either made them unempathetic or abusers themselves, or they use that made me better line as a shield so they don't have to face the reality of what kind of garbage person their abuser was. It's a fair point. I do think it's worth having the conversation, and this is part of it this week, and this is going to be part of it going forward. Not everybody considers the same thing, especially in the case of mental abuse or emotional abuse. Not everybody considers them the same. What might be to someone is not to someone else, but this is part of the conversation we have to have. Because in many cases, you're going to find coaches or you're going to find other players that are going to say, you know, I'd never thought of it like that. I didn't think anyone would take it that way. I had no idea I had that negative impact on that person. And that will be the truth for those people. I'm not suggesting that's the case with Bill Peters and Hakeem Olajuwon. There is a line there. There is an obvious one that got crossed. And no matter what that statement said last night, everybody knows that you do not use that type of language, that it's unacceptable. Everybody knows that. But I do believe there are going to be situations where you have coaches that come out and say, I didn't know that I had that impact on that person, and I'm really sorry. And had I known, I would have made reparations. I would have made things better. I would have tried to make amends back in the day. That's where we're going. Steve, Leaf Hater Steve says, it's a different time we live in. Leaf Hater Steve says, I'm guilty of saying things at times that some may find offensive. But the people I'm around know it doesn't come from a place of racism. My wife and sons are visible minorities, but we were raised in a different times. Things we said then can't be said now. And that's an interesting point of conversation we're going to have along the way here too. That people who don't realize they have said things that are hurtful, or as he pointed out in his text, potentially perceived as raceless or derogatory. What's behind those words? Is there intent behind those words? Is there meaning to demean? These are bigger conversations, and there's no easy answer I can give you in a one-minute soundbite here on my show this morning, but they're ones that need to occur. And it's okay to admit you weren't doing things the right way. Hopefully you haven't had such a negative impact on somebody's life by doing something that you would change your behavior in that you need to make the type of amends we're talking about in some of these situations. But I think for all of us, we're just hoping that this sheds light on bad practices, poor practices, and things that can't continue, and also creating opportunities for people to get better. Bick and I talked about this earlier in the week, about recognition and rehabilitation. That's a big part of this conversation as well. Recognition obviously hasn't been there for a very long time, and we're opening up the book on what behavior needs to be recognized and how it can be recognized better, but we're also opening up the book on rehabilitation. Here's how you get better. Here's how you do right by somebody. And there is a pathway back. It's not about discarding people by the wayside and saying, okay, you're of no use to me now because you did this. It's not what this is about. A lot to get into on Canucks Central. Today, we are going to focus on what happened or certainly did not in the third period last night in Pittsburgh. Bick Nizar joins me live on location next. We're at the brand new Andrew Sherrod Limited. We're in East Vancouver. We're on East First. It's just off the highway on East First. We got lunch going on here right now. Yeah, come on down. Grab yourself some free lunch. Go to Milwaukee's Cut the Cord event, which they've got set up here. If you are looking for a power tool, if you're looking for something for someone in your life, if you're a contractor, the deals you get today from Milwaukee, they only exist today. Don't miss out. Don't put it off until tomorrow. Have a little food in the process. You also can enter to win a $5,000 valued Milwaukee workshop. We'll see you here at Andrew Sherrod Limited. Canucks Central next on your home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.